wonder what a bull must feel like when they let him into the ring? The bars go up, he's free, he rushes out figuring I've gotten away. And there in front of him are 50 guys with pitchforks and a man with an oversized knitting needle. He looks around and there's no way out. Last week I found out what that feeling is like.
Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolf? No, he isn't. Huh? Oh, well, for you, maybe he is.
I'm not here.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's always here.
I've gone out.
No, no, he seldom ever goes out.
I won't start on anything tonight.
Oh, sure, he'd love to start on a case tonight.
Fooey.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, this business I'm in can get pretty silly sometimes. I can go along for a whole month and get by on nothing but meals at the automat and a dozen laughs a day. The funny ones usually pay just as well as the tough ones, but eventually somebody starts something that's about as funny as an open grave.
And now here is your guide.
There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you this fall.
OTRO.
And now, here is OTRO.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This episode is from November 5th, 1949. The episode is entitled The Singing Critic. This is a very funny episode. One of Richard Diamond's girlfriend's neighbors hates it when Rick sings, and he screams and yells and complains, and he's woken up out of the middle of the night and all that stuff. And that's who the singing critic is. Find out what he does to try to get even. And after that is the final episode of Rocky Fortune. This episode is from March 30th, 1954. The episode is entitled The Boarding House Double Cross. And after that is The Saint from July 9th, 1950. The episode is entitled The Peculiar Payoff. And The New Adventures of Nero Wolf comes from March 9th, 1951. The episode is entitled The Disappearing Diamonds. And I'm throwing in The Third Man, which is what the episode is called, but it's labeled The Lives of Harry Lime. I don't know why, but it's with Orson Welles, and it's from August 3rd, 1951. The episode entitled Too Many Crooks. And this will be the replacement for Rocky Fortune next week, so I thought I'd give you a tease as to this episode, the first episode of The Third Man, which was recorded in Europe circa 1951, and it was done through the BBC. Actually, Orson Welles was hiding out in Europe because of U.S. tax problems, and he was approached to doing this radio program called The Third Man. So, enjoy The Third Man as well and all the other shows, and I'll see you back here next week.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
About. Why aren't you at the office?
Now, don't confuse me, dear. One question at a time.
Come on in the study and I'll tell you all about it.
Oh, now stop being so mysterious. You never come over here at this time of the day.
Read some of these.
What are they?
Letters. Read them.
All of them? Well, there must be at least a half a hundred.
Well, close. 53, and those are only about one-tenth of the pile that's in my office.
Oh, Rick, are these...
Yeah, the lovely, dear, sweet tenants in that gorgeous building right next to this one.
They like your singing.
Read a couple. Me, me, me.
Dear Mr. Diamond.
La, 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 la.
Rick.
Go on, go on, go on.
Well, stop sounding like a whole quartet.
All right.
Dear Mr. Diamond. I live in the building across the way from Miss Asher's apartment.
Right over there.
At least once a week, I sit in my living room and listen to the sounds of your melodious voice. Last week, however, I waited for 7 straight days, but without result. You did not sing. Please, Mr. Diamond, for the sake of my family, continue to sing at least once a week. I am beginning to nag my husband, and yesterday I took the rubber bone away from my French poodle.
Everybody shall be exalted.
You see, it's getting to be a real problem with me, and if you want to save me the $25 a day, I would have to pay my psychiatrist, sing.
La ho!
Yours expectantly, Mrs. Louise Cartwright. Rick, are they all like this?
Well, certainly not. Some of them are really desperate. Now, here's the one I saved out. Read this one if you really want to get a charge.
Oh, me, 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 me.
My dearest Mr. Diamond.
Go on, go on, go on, go on, go on.
I have been listening to your beautiful singing.
What?
What do you mean, what?
What you just read.
I've been listening.
No, 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 the last part.
Your beautiful singing?
Yes, I'm in a chanted evening.
Oh, you show off.
Go on, finish it now, finish it.
Well, she's been listening to your beautiful singing.
Oh, yes.
And many times I've seen you going into Miss Asher's apartment, and I think you are as beautiful as your voice.
Oh.
What?
Now, you said that. Turn off the steam and read the last part.
I wouldn't miss it. Last week, I waited and waited, but you didn't sing.
Everybody shall be exalted.
I know you were in Miss Asher's apartment, and you certainly had the chance. If Miss Asher is the one that... that won't let you sing, come over to my apartment. I have a piano, and I just love it. 977 Park, apartment 303.
Hmm.
Signed, your most ardent fan, Ellen.
Mademoiselle from Armitage, Parley.
Rick, what are you doing?
Open your window. Don't you think it's a little stuffy in here?
The air conditioning's on. Rick, now stay away from that piano.
No, I knew it, I knew it. Ellen's right. You really don't want me to sing.
At 11 o'clock in the morning? No. I want you to sing tonight when it's more romantic.
Oh, shame on you.
Me?
Yes, you. You want to deprive those poor, discouraged people of a little honest, simple pleasure? You want that woman to take her dog's bone away again?
You idiot.
Oh, no telling what'll happen. Those people might not leave their apartments for days. It'll get to be like a prison camp. Think of it. No food. They won't leave the building even to go out and get an orange or a lime or something. And you know what?
What?
Scurvy.
Oh.
They'll be dying like flies.
Well, go on. What's the matter?
Dying like flies. I wonder who thought up that bright little simile. I've got a big green fly in my office that's so tough he carries a man sweater.
Oh!
Well, you think it's funny, do you? Think what'll happen if those poor people stay in that building, withering up with scurvy, you fiend.
I know it.
Yes.
It's just that, well, I don't want to share your tonsils with anyone. I'm selfish.
Me, me, me.
You're more than that. You're antisocial.
All right. All right.
You mean?
Yes. Sing.
Stout fellow. 101 pounds of fun. That's my little honey bun.
Rick?
Yes?
Did you hear something?
Oh, I think so.
Try it again.
All right. 101 pounds of fun. That's...
Rick?
Yes?
I heard it.
It's a grouch.
Rick.
Yes.
There's an enemy in the camp.
Well, what do we do? We can't just let those people die over there.
Sing him.
You mean?
Yes. Sing. It's your duty.
You're right. It's no longer a matter of personal pride.
I must defeat the grouch at all cost. For those 1,000 starving tenants.
1,000?
Big rooms. Stand back.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine.
He's
awakening. You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine. Sunshine.
He's nearly down.
You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine. You are my sunshine.
There he goes.
You are my sun.
Rick.
Victory?
Decidedly.
Bull Run was never like this.
All right. Now sing Honey Bun and save those poor people.
101 pounds of fun. That's my little honey bun. Honey bun. Bun.
Rick.
Good grief. Bun.
Rick, what happened?
I don't know. I can talk all right, but the minute I go up, something happens.
I hope you didn't hurt it.
La, 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 la.
Oh, Rick.
Oh, now, isn't that ridiculous?
I can't help laughing, but it isn't really funny. Come on, let's go get you some warm milk or something.
Mimi, Lord, I'm off.
Now, stop that. Give it a rest.
Oh, if that grouch only knew, I may never bother him again.
Well, he's the only one that doesn't like it.
Poor guy.
Poor guy, now, that's a silly thing to say.
Well, honey, he doesn't like it, let's face it. He'll probably get so desperate he'll have to move.
Okay, let him.
I wonder what he's doing right now.
I'll bet he's planning something fiendish.
You think he's going to start shooting burning arrows?
I wouldn't put it past him. Now, let's take care of that throat.
Well, sometimes silly things like that happen. I come on like a big baritone and lose my voice. Helen has to feed me hot lemon juice and honey for about 3 hours. And the grouch across the way in the next apartment starts thinking up the 10 best ways to eliminate Diamond. Think I'm kidding? Well, let me tell you. I didn't know it then, but that fast course of You Are My Sunshine with my own lyrics started more trouble than a hopped-up mouse in a herd of elephants. While Helen fed me the tonsil cure, old Grouchhead was dreaming of a cure of his own.
What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I work in the daytime, try to sleep at night. He sings at night. I switch to the night shift. He sings in the daytime. Him. I'll fix that diamond. Yeah, phone book. Phone book. Detectives. Private detail. Look at that. Richard Diamond, private detective. Full page ad. Wouldn't you know it? Yeah, look at that slogan. Whoever you are, whatever you do, if you're too dead to walk, we'll come to you. Ugh. Must be other detectives in here. Oh, here's one. Pat Kosak. You are my sunshine, eh? Oh, Diamond, I'll fix you. I'll fix you good.
Yeah?
Is this Pat Kosak?
Yeah, for employment.
Haven't I heard of you before?
I doubt it. Probably that Shamus in Frisco. He's always stealing my stuff.
Well, my name is Ernest Lumpkin.
Happy Halloween, Mr. Pumpkin.
No. Lumpkin. Lum.
Okay. What can I do for you?
Well, I've got a problem. It concerns another person in your line of work.
You mean another Shamus?
Yes, he sings.
You mean Diamond?
Oh, is he a friend of yours?
A competitor isn't a friend. Diamond gets more clients than anyone in the business, so he isn't even a competitor. He's a capitalist. He can advertise. People go to him instead of me. I hate him.
Oh, Mr. Koslak, hey, you're not alone.
The name's Kosak, Mr. Dumpkin.
Lumpkin.
Lumpkin Dumpkin. You want to hire me?
But you don't even know what I want you to do.
Pay me $50 a day.
If you can do the job in one day.
For $50, I'll steal a Chrysler building and bring it over to you on a motor scooter. What's your address?
977 Park Avenue. And hurry!
Throat feel now?
Oh, scalded. I'll be eating Zymol Trochies for a week.
Oh, now, it wasn't that hot.
Wasn't it? Honey, that lime water was so hot, Alibaba could have boiled his 40 thieves in it.
Well, your speaking voice is all right.
Well, I think I've swallowed the bear rug.
Where are you going?
Well, I can't sing, and I'm going to see you tonight anyway, so I think I'll drop down to the 5th Precinct and drive Sergeant Otis out of his mind.
Oh, Rick, that poor man. He called up last week when Lieutenant Levinson was looking for you, and he sounded like he was dying, and you were responsible.
Honey, when Otis dies, everybody will be running around in spaceships. He got through the Stone Age all right, didn't he? Bye. I left Helen and headed for the 5th Precinct Police Station. It was one of those good afternoons. The sun was leaning on 3 o'clock, and now and then a cool breeze would sail through my sinus and pump my lungs full of that easy, good-to-be-walking-around feeling. I had just about everything. Good job, good girl, and a 4-0 report from my insurance company. When I reached the station, I hopped up the steps and bounced into the squad room. Sergeant Otis was sitting over in the corner making out the weekly report for the commissioner. Hello, Otis.
What do you want, Shamus?
Well, really nothing. I just came by to see if I could borrow one of your shoes. I'm going sailing.
Oh, that's very funny. You know, someday, Gumshoe, you're going to run out of gags. Then what are you going to do?
Well, I could set you on fire. That's sure to be a good chuckle. Hmm?
Oh, yeah.
Lieutenant in?
Yeah.
Otis, you want to know how to catch a crook?
Ah, wise guy.
Eat a lot of spaghetti.
Oh? How can I catch a crook that way?
Just open that big mouth and say, oh, yeah. You'll lasso him. Hello, Lieutenant Levinson.
Lieutenant Levinson? Well, how do you do, Mr. Diamond? Now, what's with the formal routine?
Oh, I can't help it. Every time I leave Otis, I feel like I've just stepped out of a gorilla cage.
Oh, why don't you leave that poor guy alone, Rick?
Oh, he's used to it. If I started treating him like a human being, he'd get so confused he'd probably cut off his tail. Think what would happen, Walt, when he wanted to go to sleep at night. No more hanging upside down.
Oh, brother. What's on your mind?
Oh, just thought I'd stop by and chew the fat.
Well, go ahead.
I already did. Chewed a whole pound right off Otis. Walt, are you sure he's a mammal?
Now, you listen to me. Otis is a nice fella for a hammerhead. He can't help it, so stop tearing him down and tell me what you really want.
Walt, I'm surprised at you. I just wanted to stop by and say hello.
Hello. Where's the body?
Now, look, there's no body, just a nice chat, that's all.
Okay, but I warn you, I won't stand for any routines. And if you're mixed up in something and I have to find out the hard way, so help me, I'll put you away so far they'll have to pipe air into you.
Walt, you do.
Do what?
Love me.
Oh.
Would you like to wear my Sig Alf pin?
Rick, for Pete's sake, what's the matter with you? You've been growing poppies in your office? Wait a minute. Yeah, what is it, Otis?
Miss Asher on the phone for Diamond.
Okay. Phone for you, Rick. Helen.
Oh, thanks. 5th Precinct, remember our motto, a corpse in the morgue is worth two in your basement.
Oh, no.
It's true, Walt, it's true.
Oh, that Walt just jumped out of the window.
No, honey, there's a cast system around here. When Walt feels like jumping out of a window, he throws Otis out first to see if it hurts.
Ouch.
Hi, you baby.
Hi. Rick, Mr. Jones called and said it was very important that he see you at once, said it was a matter of life and death.
Jones? First name John?
Well, he didn't say. He just gave me an address and asked you to come over immediately. 137 River Street.
He called me at your apartment?
Uh-huh. Hey, I never thought of that. How'd he get the number?
No telling. Well, I'll go on over. Maybe he'll turn out to be a good client. Call you later, baby.
How's your throat?
Oh, la done, I'm open.
Goodbye, Rick.
Hey, you really sound terrible.
I'll see you later, Walt.
Huh? Oh, well, thanks for the brilliant conversation, Sporty.
Walt, just because I didn't have a corpse hidden out someplace, you get mad. All right, see if I care.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
No, I understand. Well, you can just get someone else to play jacks with. I'll send you Sam Spade.
Now, Rick! Otis.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
Why haven't you got that report in here?
I've been eating spaghetti.
Spaghetti?
Yeah, and that Diamond's a liar. I can't lasso nothing. Maybe you have to be a cowboy.
Thanks, Cabby. Keep the change. On 137 River Street, the address Helen had given me over the phone, was an old deserted warehouse. Now, I want to stop right here and say I admit it was pretty stupid to wander into an empty warehouse like that. But I figured that this Jones guy must be in some kind of trouble to leave a message like that with Helen. The place was as empty as a fairground in the winter. I put my hand on my .38 and kept moving toward the back of the building. Then I saw a door. A sign on it said, John Jones. Enter. And wouldn't you know it, I did.
Hey, what's going on? Where am I? Let me out of here.
Come on, Mr. Lumpkin, let's get out of here.
Let me out of here.
But I don't understand. He's liable to stay in there forever.
don't want him to stop singing like that.
Somebody will come along, I promise you that. I just want him to stay in there for half an hour, that's all.
And now, wait a minute. I want to know just what this is all about.
You want him to lose his voice, don't you?
Oh, I'd love it.
Well, when he went through that door, he started losing it.
How? Well, what's behind that door?
An icebox. Come on, Mr. Grumpkin.
Well, that's exactly where I was, in an icebox. Not a very big one, but a very cold one. The kind a company might have to store fresh meat and drinks. I tried breaking down the door, but it was a foot thick. I struck a match and looked around. Lots of ice, no way out. So I turned up my collar and sat on the wait. I don't know how long I sat there, but I guessed it to be about 20 minutes. I could tell because my feet had frozen up about 20 minutes worth. Then I heard that lovely sound.
Rick, you in there?
Yeah. Hand me an ice pick. I want to get my feet uncrossed.
How on the devil did this happen?
Well, I think one of the frozen food companies got a new idea.
What's the matter, Diamond? Forget your sleigh.
Shut up, Otis. You think you can walk, Rick?
Yeah, sure, but I might squeak a little. Ooh. Got a Bunsen burner handy?
Otis.
Okay.
How did you find me?
We got a call.
From a guy named Jones?
Yeah. Said he was in danger and that you were coming down to meet him at the warehouse. Said he saw two guys lock you in this icebox.
Oh, dandy. Did he say where he was?
Yeah. Here's the address.
Thanks.
Hey, where do you think you're going?
Well, I feel better now. I'm going over to find Jones.
Well, you might get in trouble.
Well, if I can find the two guys who locked me up, you can bet on it.
Well, I'm going to send Otis along with you.
Otis? I thought you wanted me to keep out of trouble.
Oh, now, wait a minute. I can keep you out of trouble, Diamond.
Oh, Otis, you couldn't find an elephant in an elevator. But come on and bring your head with you.
This is the address where that Jones guy said he'd meet you.
I. Mandelbaum, Swedish massage. This guy really picks out some great places to hide out. Come on, Otis. Feet first, or the rest of you will never get out of the car.
Oh. Hey, Diamond. You think while you're talking with this guy Jones, I might get me a rub down?
Otis, to rub that stomach of yours, it would take a gallon of baby oil and an octopus to get anywhere.
Hey, it smells kind of good, don't it? Like a pine tree, maybe.
Otis, how would you remember? The last time you smelled a pine tree was when you used to run with the pack.
Now listen here, Diamond. You gotta lay off. I don't go around...
Yeah, what can I do for you?
Holy cow. Get the biceps.
Oh, I'm looking for a guy named Jones.
Yeah? Who wants him?
The name's Diamond.
Oh. Well, Mr. Jones is expecting you. I think he's back in the steam.
Which way is it?
Straight back. I'd show you, but I gotta give a guy a rub.
Come on, Otis.
You must be at the end of the hall.
That's a pretty bright observation, seeing as how there's only one door and it's at the end of the hall.
Yeah, that's the steam room.
How do you know?
By this little window in the door.
What do you see?
Steam.
Then, by golly, it must be the steam room.
Hey, I can't see nothing.
Mr. Jones?
Hey, ain't that some guy lying over there on the bench?
Looks like it. Mr. Jones?
He don't answer.
No. Otis, look, I'm going over there. Keep the door open. I don't want anyone to lock me in this place.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Jones, Well, hey, Otis. It's just a bunch of towels rolled up to look like somebody.
Hey!
Otis, what's the matter?
Diamond.
Yeah. Where are you?
Right over here.
Well, what are you doing there? I told you to stay by the door and keep it open.
Well, I did stay by the door until I got pushed.
Pushed? Oh, no.
You know something?
What?
I think we're locked in.
Oh, shut up, Otis.
But I don't feel so good. What are we gonna do?
Oh, why don't you be happy? It's the only chance you'll ever get to sweat off some of that blubber.
Yeah, you want I should look like one of the atrocity pictures?
Otis, you could lose 300 pounds and still weigh in with King Kong.
Yeah, there's no time to get nasty.
Well, relax. Read a magazine or something.
What do you mean?
Just what I said. Read a magazine. Isn't that one right over there?
Yeah. Oh, for Pete's sake. How can I read this thing, Shamus? The pages is all stuck together.
You couldn't read the first line of an eye chart anyway. Just look at the pictures and shut up.
Okay. Hey!
What's the matter?
This magazine. Take a look at this.
What is it?
It's one of them movie magazines of Movie Stars Parade.
So what?
Well, get a load of these pictures. Ain't that you?
Let me see. Well, how about that? Some guy acting like Richard Diamond, private detective.
Well, it looks like you.
No, it's that Powell guy, that actor. Tear it up.
Oh, no, no, it's a good magazine.
Give me that.
Oh, hey, what'd you do that for?
If it hadn't been for that juvenile, I could have been in pictures myself. Now, try kicking in that little window again.
It's no use. That glass must be bulletproof.
Oh, swell. First an icebox and now a steam bath. I'm going to start thinking I'm in California.
Well, don't just sit there sweating. Do something. My uniform's shrinking.
Well, maybe now it'll match your head. I just can't figure this. If someone wants to get rid of me, why did they do it the old-fashioned way?
Oh, don't say that.
How long do you think we've been in here?
I don't know. Hey, Diamond.
Yeah?
My socks just disappeared.
Well, go kick on the door again. It's your turn.
I don't think I can make it. We've been in here for days. Hey, look at your watch.
It's all steamed up. I can't tell.
You think there'll be anything left?
Just your shoes, Otis. It'll take a blast furnace to get rid of those. Oh, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I thought I heard somebody outside.
Yeah? Hey, help! Help!
Shut up.
Hey. Hey, what's going on in here? Who closed the bolt on the door?
We're saved.
Would you mind helping us out, old man? We seem to be a little limp.
Hey, where's Mr. Jones? Hey, what are you doing in here with your clothes on?
Trying to get them steam cleaned.
Oh, fresh air.
Now, would you two guys mind telling me what this is all about?
Maybe you better tell us, Buster.
I don't know what you mean.
Who locked the door on us?
How do I know? I give a guy a rub. When I come back, I find the door bolted. Hey, where's Mr. Jones?
You sure he was in the steam room?
Sure. He comes in and says he wants a steam. You should show up. I should send you back. I told him I was going to give a rub to stay in long as he liked.
Did he ask you how long the rub would be?
Yeah. Matter of fact, he did. I said it'd be about half hour.
I don't get it. I don't get it. He wanted me in that steam room for just a half an hour. He wanted me in that icebox for about the same time. What's with this?
Diamond, look at this uniform.
Oh, I think it's lovely, Otis. You should always wear knickers.
This is stupid. Didn't the guy at the steam room tell you what this Jones guy looked like?
Well, from the description, could have been anyone. Look, I'm just as mixed up as you are.
Well, we'll keep after it. Just don't worry, that's all.
Hey, Diamond. Miss Asher just called and I told her what's been happening.
You mean you know?
No, but I told her anyway. She said you should come right over because she had dinner for you. She wanted to take care of you.
Isn't he lovely, Walt? Think what that head is going to look like in a bottle.
Oh...
Now you got him sore. It's going to be horrible around here.
Well, isn't it always? Well, I'm going on over to Helen's. Keep after that Jones guy and let me know if you run across anything.
How are you, Mr. Klumpkin?
Lumpkin.
Okay, how are you?
Come in. Well?
I've been a friend, Boyle, for a while.
You think it did the trick?
Look, when Pat,
Kosak.
Well, when I do anything, the results are guaranteed. I just tailed Diamond from the station. He went into his girlfriend's apartment across the way.
Oh, goody. Let's see what happens tonight. I'm staying home from work just to hear him not sing.
Yeah. About my 50 bucks.
Oh, look, he's never in that apartment more than 10 minutes before he starts singing. If he goes over 15, you get your 50. Come on.
What are we going to do?
Raise the window. I don't want to miss the lovely silence when he opens that big bazoo.
Should be.
Don't
know what I've been through.
Oh, yes, I do. And Mommy's going to make it better. Here's a nice drink.
I don't want a nice drink.
Oh, it's strong enough.
Well, put it in a dirty glass.
You just drink it.
Okay. Oh, wow. My throat.
You hear something?
No, why?
Nothing. Your throat's still pretty bad.
Don't know. Me. Oh, hey, it's pretty good.
That sounds great.
Oh, no!
Now, I heard something then.
Yeah, so did I. It's a grouch again.
Give it to him.
Oh, you bet. I feel mean.
101 pounds of fun. That's my little honey bun. Get a load of honey bun tonight. I'm speaking of my sweetie pie. Only 60 inches high. Every inch is packed with dynamite. Her hair is blonde and curly. Her curls are hurly-burly. Her lips are pips. I call her hips. Whirly and whirly. She's my baby. I'm her pep. I'm her booby. She's my trap. I am caught and I don't want to run, cause I'm having so much fun with honey bun.
What's going on over there?
Your contract.
Okay, but don't hit me again. You can keep the 50 bucks.
And he wouldn't sing again, huh? Said you fixed it. Well, I'll fix you.
No, not that. Put down that chair.
Oh! Go on, get out of here. That vulture is singing better than ever.
Okay, only don't hit me again.
Help.
Yes, Rick?
You know, that ice box and that steam bath were the best things in the world for my throat.
Yes. After you lost your voice this morning, I didn't think anything was going to help. But that ice box and that steam bath really did.
Diamond!
Oh, hello, Mr. Lumpkin.
Did I hear you say you lost your voice this morning?
That's right, Mr. Lumpkin. Then didn't think I was going to get it back either.
Good night, Mr. Diamond!
Oh!
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Jack Crucian, and Stephen Dunn. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Richard Diamond is written and directed by Blake Edwards.
Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell, was previously released over the National Broadcasting Company for listeners in the United States and has been re-released to you men and women overseas by the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
Hi, did I ever tell you about the time I decided to give up my place on Bleakman Street and find a new room? Oh, not that the place was bad, but when I started using my mailbox as a numbers drop, I decided it was time to find a new pad, which I did. The only trouble was the landlady. She wanted to collect the first month's rent in blood. And when I objected, her superintendent tried to terminate my lease on life. Hello? Anybody home? Hey, where's the management?
Right behind you. Put up your hands. Hey,
what is this?
You tell me, bright boy.
I'm looking for a room.
What brought you here?
The sign in the window that says room for rent. Now, would you mind pointing that horse pistol the other way?
What's your name?
Julius LaRosa. What's yours?
You're a wise guy.
Listen, Sammy, put down the artillery and let's get
that. Who is it, Lenny?
This joke was wandering around inside, Ma.
The door was open. The sign said room for rent, so I came in.
You want to rent a room.
That's the general idea, Ma.
Put away the gun, Lenny.
Ma, how do you know who this character is?
Put it away.
Thanks, Ma.
We've been having trouble with thieves lately. Lenny thought maybe you was one.
Well, I'm glad you protect your guests. Do you have a room?
We got one vacancy on this floor, third door down.
Can I see it?
This way. $5 a week in advance.
This is a peachy view of the garbage bin.
Take it or leave it.
Well, I'd like to leave it, but I need a flop until I can locate an apartment. I'll take it.
Five.
Wait till I get the vault open, will you? One, two, three, four, five.
No heavy drinking in the rooms. Keep off the second floor. That's where me and Lenny live.
It's a deal. You keep off my floor, and I'll keep off yours.
I ain't joking, mister. You set foot on those stairs, and Lenny's liable to lose his temper. When Lenny loses his temper, he's liable to do anything. Anything. Well, welcome to 55 Bishop Street. My name's Thompson. You call me Ma.
That's touching.
If you go out at night, be careful. This is a tough neighborhood.
I come from a pretty tough neighborhood.
This ain't pretty tough. It's real tough.
Oops. I park my duffel and flop down on the mattress, which is a cross between a sack of cement and the Aberdeen Proving Grounds for light, medium, and heavy tanks. No sooner do I close my eyes than the door opens. In walks a little bald-headed guy about 40 wearing rimless glasses. A Casper Milk Toast if I ever seen one, and I seen several.
What are you doing here?
What do I look like I'm doing? Playing Scrabble? Do you believe in knocking?
Get out of this room.
Oh, you got to get a little bigger before you talk like that to a full-grown man, Buster.
Where are my things? Where's Helen?
I ain't seen your things, and the only Helen I know is Helen of Troy, and she moved to Utica about 3 years ago.
Oh, very funny.
I didn't think it was that good.
It wasn't. Now, see here. I want you out of our room, and I demand to know
Nothing
where...
Nothing wrong, Mr. Fortune.
This billiard head keeps acting like somebody's in the wrong department.
Mrs. Thompson, what is this man doing in my room?
Who are you?
Who am I? Why, I'm Gerald Kinsey. My wife, Helen, and I have had this room for a week now.
Mister, you're nuts. I ain't never seen you in my life.
Never seen me? I paid you a week's rent this morning. My wife, Helen, was...
I don't know anybody named Helen except Helen of Troy, and she...
He knows.
Come on, Horace. Get out of here.
Oh, are you all out of your minds? What is this?
You heard me, Homer. Vanish.
I demand my wife. I demand...
You demand a belt and a mouth if you don't beat it.
I will now. I'll...
Nothing wrong, Ma.
We got a stray bedbug. He thinks he lives here.
Lenny. You remember me. Gerald Kinsey. My wife, Helen, and I were...
What are you talking about, Ma?
Lenny!
Look, Zeke. You got the wrong house, maybe, huh?
Wrong house? Why, this is 55 Bishop Street, room one. My wife and I were...
Lenny, show him the door.
Let's go.
I will not go. I demand my wife. I demand my wife.
One, two, and away we go.
Take your hands off of me and I'll...
You're nothing. Now get out. And if you come back here, I'll kill you, understand? I'll break every bone in your body. Ow! Ow!
I watched Lenny give Gerald a bicep like he was a sack of old feathers, and then I start to unpack. Inside the dresser drawer, I spot a cufflink with the monogrammed initials GK on it. Also, there was some spilled face powder. I put the cufflink in my pocket and lie down on my bed to think things over. I'm just starting to doze off when I hear a sound at the window. So I make like I'm asleep, and I wait. A second later, Gerald slips into the room with a medium-sized paving stone in his mitt. He tiptoes over to the bed and gets ready to drop the concrete on my skull as I mousetrap him.
Hold it. Drop it. Come on, drop it.
Ouch, my arm. You're breaking it.
Drop the Mickey. Now sit down.
Oh, please.
You better start talking, sonny. I'm going to get rough, too.
Who are you?
My name's Rocky Fortune. I just rented this room. They forgot to tell me it was an outpatient clinic for Bellevue.
You're not with them?
With who? I'm not with anybody.
Then you've got to help me.
Give me one convincing reason.
Listen, you've got to believe me, mister. For the past 3 days, my wife and I have lived in this room. This morning, I went out to look for a job. When I came back just now, they rented the room to you. They're just pretending they never saw me. They've done something to my wife. I know they have.
Why should they?
I don't know. They may be in some shady business or something. Maybe she found out about it. But, oh, please, please, you must believe me.
Hold it. Your initials are GK, aren't they?
Why, yes. Gerald Kinsey.
You ever see this cufflink?
What? Why, that's the one I lost. Helen and I looked all over for it.
It was under the shelving paper and some newspaper in the dresser.
But, why, that should prove I lived here.
It's enough to go on, Gerald.
You see, the whole thing is a plot to...
Shh.
Huh?
Fortune!
Just a minute. Look, you better use the emergency exit. Out the window. If Nature Boy finds you in here, he'll take you apart like a jigsaw puzzle.
What'll I do?
I got a friend who's a cop. 21st Precinct, Sergeant Finger.
Huh?
Tell him I sent you and bring him back here, quick.
Open up!
Now beat it. Remember, Finger, Sergeant Hamilton J. Finger.
I thought I heard somebody talking in there.
Talking? Oh, that was me. I always talk to myself.
Oh, that's a bad habit.
I never listen to it.
Huh. That's a good one. It'll keep you out of trouble.
What kind of trouble did you have in mind?
The kind where they bury you. Remember it.
Lenny goes upstairs, and I settle down to wait for Gerald and the gendarmes. After a couple of minutes, I hear the steps creak. I crack the door in time to see Grandma carrying a brown paper bag to the back of the hall. She takes maybe two steps and stops.
You're liable to get your nose caught in the crack of that door, Mr. Fortune.
I could spare a little.
We like the border to keep the door closed.
Gee, you and Lenny are a couple of real trusting souls, ain't you?
I told you we've been having sneak thieves.
Can I help you with that paper bag?
Just going out back to put the garbage out. I can manage.
Just trying to be friendly.
Try it with the door closed.
Sure, Ma. I hear Ma go out the back door with a bag of garbage. After about 20 minutes, I hear her close the door and go up the steps again. I figure either she went all the way to the city disposal plant with that stuff, or it wasn't a bag of garbage. After things quiet down, I tiptoe down the hall and open the back door. There's a small yard with a high concrete wall. It's filled with broken bottles, old almanacs, and other valuable stuff. At one end is a small wooden shed big enough for a half a dozen garbage cans with a cheap padlock on the outside. Just in a hunch, I go over to the shed and knock. Anybody home? Now, why would anybody want to put a padlock on the garbage? Anybody here beside you chickens? Okay, we'll just do a little lock picking and have a look. Wow. Don't tell me the housing authority has this place listed as an apartment. You're Helen, right?
Who are you?
My name's Rocky Fortune. How does that guy rate a knockout like you?
Are you working for Gerald?
More or less. He and I seem to share a room.
Listen, you've got to help me.
Maybe we better close the door, just in case Lenny decides to check on his guests. Why have they got you locked up here?
I don't know. Ma and the big one, Lenny, they must have drugged me or something. You got to tell that to Gerald. They locked me out here. They told me they'd kill me if I made a sound. No kidding, mister.
What are you so scared of me for?
You tell Gerald. I wouldn't want him to think I left him on my own or anything. You know how he gets.
You have been drugged. Now, take it easy, kid. We'll have you out of here in no time, as soon as I figure out a way.
You believe me, don't you? I didn't run away from Gerald. Honest, I didn't.
Did you want to?
We had a big fight this morning. But I didn't mean what I said. It's those people, Ma and Lenny. They put me out here.
All right, come on. Let's get out of here. The fragrance from these garbage cans is a little bit too... Uh-oh.
What is it?
That was the back door to the house. Here comes Lenny and Grandma.
You'd better hide.
Where? In my pocket?
The garbage can.
Smart girl. Okay, put the lid on.
Hey, turn on the air conditioning, will you?
Shh. I'm feeling a little bit like a rotten pimento in an undersized olive when it dawns on me that Lenny's going to notice that the lock has been opened. He does.
We out here, Ma?
I just brought her some food.
The lock is open.
I locked it.
It didn't open itself. You gotta be careful.
I told you I locked it.
Well, we better go in.
Food okay, dearie?
Yes.
You better finish it. We're getting you out of here in about 15 minutes.
Out?
Your husband was snooping around. Things might get a little too hot.
Where will you take me?
Oh, I know a nice quiet spot where nobody will look in a million years. I gotta buy a car. As soon as I get it, we move out. Come on, Ma.
You better take the full garbage cans out front for the collection, Lenny.
What's today?
Tuesday. We got a load of stuff.
Okay.
I'll stay here and watch Mrs. Kinsey.
Here's the gun. I'll just throw this one out first. What you got in here, old lead?
A couple of minutes, I die while Big Lenny rolls me out to the front of the house to be picked up by a gent from the sanitation department. As I feel myself lifted into the truck, I decide I'll keep quiet till Lenny gets back to the house. It's then that I hear the machine that grinds the stuff.
Okay, Charlie, toss up that next can. What's the matter, Charlie? You forget to eat your crispy crunchies? Come on, let's have it. Hey, I see what you mean. Now, let's get the cover off this one and take a look. Hey!
Pardon me, Sam. Is this the subway to Jackson Heights?
What are you doing in that can?
Can? Holy mackerel, I thought I was in a subway car. Give me a hand, will you, Sam?
Yeah, sure. Are you nuts, Buster?
I guess I am, Sam. Would anybody in his right mind get into a garbage can by mistake? I'll see you around. I shake a few breadcrumbs out of my hair and climb off the truck. I sneak back into the house and make for my room. I get there and hear voices inside.
I told you to stay away from here.
I want my wife, Lenny, and I'll kill you if you don't tell me where she's hiding.
Go ahead. Pull the trigger. You haven't got the gut to kill anybody.
It won't be the first time.
It may be the last.
Let go of my throat. Rocky, hit him.
A pleasure, pal.
Is he out?
Like a busted street lamp.
I guess you saved my life.
How come you didn't get the cops?
I got a gun instead. I was determined I'd handle it myself.
Somehow you just don't seem the type. Anyway, I located your ever-loving wife.
Helen? Where?
They got her stashed in a wooden garbage shed in the back.
Oh, I'll get her.
You stay here and keep the gun on Loverboy in case he recovers from that belt I gave him.
Oh.
I'll get Helen.
Okay, maybe that's best.
And keep an eye out for Ma. I don't think she's going to like us. I leave Gerald and Lenny in my room and slip on my way out to the shed. I do another hairpin job on the lock and open it up. Helen's sitting on a stack of old newspapers waiting. Helen?
Rocky, you all right?
Yeah, except for a slight tinge of city dump number 5. You ready to get out of the shoebox?
Yes, but what about Lenny?
Lenny's in on his face in my room, and your husband's holding a heater on him.
Gerald? Is here?
Uh-huh.
I see. Puts a slightly different color on things.
You don't look very happy.
I'm not.
What's wrong?
It's none of your business.
Now, look, baby, I almost got myself bumped off getting you out of this trap. Now, level with me.
I'll level, Rocky, but at you, not with you. Get him up.
What is this, Kill Fortune Day in Brooklyn? Where did you get the artillery?
I had it.
I don't get it.
You will. Turn around.
So, you ain't exactly the damsel in distress I figured you for.
Look, button brain, for reasons of my own, I'm not interested in meeting my dear husband right now. I told Ma and Lenny that he was an escaped convict holding me prisoner. I talked them into hiding me out here and pretending they'd never seen me.
How did you manage that?
Little money can make people do very noble things. No more talk now. This won't hurt a bit. I'll just...
Hold it, Helen! Drop the gun! You keep away from it, Fortune. Okay. Ma, into the shed.
You can't do this. Lenny needs a doctor.
I'm doing it. Lenny will come to in an hour or so. I just kicked him once or twice.
Oh, you're a nice kid.
We're even, Fortune. You saved me. I saved you.
Shall we dance?
The only ones who are going to dance are me and my sweet little double-crossing wife.
Gerald, I swear I didn't double-cross you. The old woman and her son, they found out about the jewels. They locked me out here and tried to make me give them up.
That's a lie. You told us your husband took dope and beat you. You asked us to help you get away from him.
That sounds more like my little girl.
She's lying, Gerald. They kidnapped me.
Sure. Where's the stuff?
I hid it.
I'll bet you did. Well, find it.
It's in the ash can. Here.
Is this all the stuff from the Rensselaer job?
It's all there, Gerald.
It better be. Because you and I are going for a little journey. And you know how it upsets me when somebody tries to pull a fast one on me.
It's all there.
Okay, Fortune. You and Ma, here are lucky. I'm going to give you a chance to stay alive for a while longer. Because you've been so good. Come on, baby. We're going.
We ain't going anyplace, mister.
Well, look who woke up. Step aside, big boy.
Not till I finished that little job on you that I started a while back.
Hey, don't show it. She isn't right that it was a trick. They're both thieves.
I ain't interested in what they are and what they ain't. I'm going to take your pot, Baldy, and then I'm going to work on your pal here.
I warn you, Lenny. I'll shoot you.
You don't scare me.
Lenny, don't. Please, mister, he's still groggy. He don't know what he's doing.
Tell him to step aside.
Lenny, don't do it.
I'm going to give you something to remember.
Lenny! Lenny! Oh, no. No.
Keep away from him, Ma.
Now you're a murderer, too, or isn't that news?
Shut up. Helen, take Ma into the house and lock her in a cellar.
What are you
going
to do?
Never mind that. Get going. Somebody might have heard those shots.
Come on, Ma. Jerry, there's a cop standing out at the end of the alley.
Is he coming?
No, he's just looking around.
He heard the shots. Hurry up, get going.
Let's go.
Now, don't try anything. I got 50 grand worth of stuff here.
I won't.
Okay, Fortune. Help me get this stiff into one of those empty cans.
Suppose I don't.
I'll kill you.
I'll help.
Ready? Now. Cover on.
Hello?
Shut up.
Anybody in that shed?
Climb into that other can.
Now listen.
I said climb in. One peep and I'll let you have it.
Anything you say.
Now, get down. I'm going to put the cover on.
Now listen.
Do what I say.
Okay, okay. Anybody in here?
Oh, hello, officer.
Oh, I thought I heard somebody in here.
Oh, I live here. I just came out to take the garbage cans out front.
Oh, didn't happen to hear a sound like a couple of shots a minute ago, did you?
Shots? I was rattling these garbage cans so that I couldn't even hear you come down the alley.
Funny. I thought sure they came from behind the house. So you're a small man to be handling those heavy cans here. Let me help you roll them out in front.
Oh, that's all right, officer. I can manage them.
Ah, nonsense. I hate to see a man hurt himself. I was out of work for 3 months myself once, lifting a car off a dead body.
What, you don't say.
Here, I'll wrestle this one for you.
Oh,
my Thompson must do some heavy baking. Well, here goes.
Again, headed for the city dump. I'm afraid to open my app because I don't know whether Gerald has his cannon pointed at me or not, so I figure I'll let him roll me out to the sidewalk before I make my move. By the time I reach the street, I'm so dizzy I feel like I'm in somebody's mixer with the dial set at heavy whip.
Oh, thanks, officer. You can just leave him right here. Oh, looks like we missed the morning pickup anyway.
Yeah, there's an empty one here. Well, I'll just be moving along.
Oh, thanks a lot. You're a real lifesaver.
I hate to see a man strain himself. I was... Well, you're in luck. Here comes the garbage truck back from his run. I'll just stop him.
Oh, no. There's no need for that.
Since he's an old pal of mine. Hey, Hennessy! Hey!
What's the... Well, if it ain't New York's finest officer, Clarence Kilcannon.
Hey, Hank, do us a favor, will you? Ma Thompson missed the morning pickup, and she's got a couple of cans loaded to the brim. Would you dump them out?
Thompson, huh? Say, you know, I was emptying one of her cans this morning, and a live character steps out and asks me if this is the subway?
Sure, and you're pulling my leg.
May I never take another breath if it ain't true.
Another drop would be more fitting here now.
Hey, Charlie. Give the officer a hand with those. I wouldn't want him to strain himself.
Up we go.
And off with the lid.
Oh, no.
Top of the can to you.
What the? Hey, mister. Hey, come back.
Officer, grab him. There's a corpse in that other can.
Hey, come back. Come back or I'll shoot.
My arm.
Ah, stand still. It's just a scratch. Now, what's this about? He shot Mrs. Thompson's son. The body's in the other can.
Officer, it's a lie.
Yeah, well, we'll just go back and have a look. Hey, wait a minute.
What is it?
I know you're from someplace.
The lineup, maybe?
Lineup? By Godfrey, there's an APB out for this character. Gerald Kent, alias Kinsey, alias Kenoy. He's wanted for the Rensselaer jewels theft with a woman named Norma Lynn.
That's the boy. His wife's inside the house.
Well, we'll just go in and see about that.
Hey, Kilcannon, what do you want me to do about the garbage?
Stick around, Hennessy. We'll be out in a minute with two cans full. And you can dump them off at the city jail.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast include Frank Richards, Gloria Ann Simpson, Jim Eagles, Virginia Gregg, Eddie Fields, and Maurice Hart. Tonight's script was written by George Lepperts. Andrew C. Love directed. Question. What is the top speed you can safely drive after dark if you have to rely on your own headlights to show up danger? The answer, according to the National Safety Council, is 45 miles per hour. If you exceed 45, you're driving beyond the visibility limit of your headlights. Keep plenty of distance between yourself and the car ahead. The secret of safe driving is simply to use common sense. Take your time, not your life. Tonight, enjoy Fibber McGee and Molly on the NBC Radio Network. The National Broadcasting Company delays the start of this program to bring you a special bulletin. From the NBC newsroom in New York, a display of perfect teamwork by American ground and air forces has stalled the communist drive on the Chonan front. One dispatch says the North Koreans have suffered their first real thrashing of the invasion. And their push on Tajan with 50,000 troops has been halted, at least for the moment, at a point some 35 miles from Tajan. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news. Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, transcribed, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
Taxi! Taxi!
You don't want a taxi, Mr. Templer. I got a car right here.
What? Well, Augie Cawthelwaite. So when did you leave Alcatraz?
Oh, I got my diploma a couple of months ago. Now I'm back on the Apple.
Oh.
Hop in.
Are you going my way?
Yeah, I'm going your way.
All right, thanks. You're sure it's no trouble?
It's no trouble. Move into the driver's seat.
You want me to drive?
That's right.
Why? Oh, don't tell me this is a hot car, and you don't want to be found at the wheel.
How did you guess?
Augie, didn't you learn anything in prison?
Yeah, I learned crime does not pay, besides which it is against the law.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Didn't you know?
I mean, I'm glad to find out you know.
Oh, sure, Mr. Templer. I learned my lesson. I'm off crime for keeps.
But then this car.
Ain't it a beaut? And the keys was in it. With a setup like that, it'd be a crime not to take it. And like I said...
Yes, you're off crime for keeps.
Yeah. Now, let's go, shall we? Start her up.
Oh, but Augie...
Do like I tell you.
Oh, certainly, Augie.
That's right. Now, put her into first.
Oh, Augie, why didn't you swipe a car with automatic drive while you're at it?
I just wasn't thinking.
Augie, why the gun?
So you'll do like I tell you.
Oh.
That's how come you're driving. I want to keep my eye on you.
The eye I don't mind. It's the gun I resent. Put it away and I'll be grateful as long as I live.
Trouble is, you ain't gonna live very long.
Oh, so that's how we stand.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Templer, but what can I do? The job's a job.
Chuck the job. You know the saying, all work and no play.
Well, I'll play after I knock off.
You mean after you knock me off?
That's right.
But, Augie, you know, if you kill me, you'll hate yourself in the morning.
Yeah, I know. But if I don't, I'll hate myself tonight. It's a cash deal.
And if I top whatever you're getting?
No dice. I got my reputation to think of.
Oh, pardon me for being crude.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Templer.
Well, as long as you're determined to get rid of me, at least tell me who's giving the orders.
Oh, sorry. That's confidential.
Oh, I won't breathe it to a living soul, believe me.
Huh? Oh, I guess you won't at that.
So there's no harm.
I guess you're right, under the circumstances.
Well, then?
It's a guy named Ronald Stanton.
Ronald Stanton? Who's he?
In my business, you don't ask questions.
All right, a guy named Ronald Stanton. But what's he got against me?
Look, in my business, you don't...
Ah, yes, but in my business, you do.
Oh. Well, all I know, Stanton calls me in, gives me the assignment, gives me a down payment, and I get the rest on delivery.
Of my corpse.
Right.
Well, it's nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, I'm sorry about this, Mr. Templer, but times are tough.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to take what comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunity only knocks once.
Mm-hmm.
A guy's got to live.
My sentiments exactly.
Hey, wait a minute. What are you doing?
I'm just stepping on the gas.
Slow down. I said slow down or I'll plug you.
You think we can find a coffin built for two?
Look out for that car!
Close.
What are you trying to do, scare me to death?
It's a thought.
If you don't stop...
Yes?
If you don't stop...
You said that before.
Please, Mr. Templer.
Oh, you want me to stop?
Yeah.
Well, all right.
What hit me?
The windshield, and now I'll take that gun. Come on, Augie, snap out of it.
Mr. Templer, what was the idea? Don't you realize... we might have been killed.
Never mind, Johnson. I'll get it. I'm expecting visitors.
Very good, sir.
Yes?
Are you Ronald Stanton?
Yes, and you?
Simon Templer,
Simon Templer. As I live and breathe.
No, as I do. Surprise, isn't it?
Where's Augie?
Nursing a headache.
Oh, dear me, I should have known.
May I come in? I want to talk to you.
Certainly, certainly.
Said the spider to the fly. But before you get any ideas, Mr. Stanton, I've left word I was coming here. So for your sake...
I quite understand. Come in.
Right.
Now, you have nothing to worry about, Mr. Templer. I am constitutionally incapable of violence. That's why I'm forced to depend upon dullards like Augie.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I'm really in every way unsuited for the sort of work I've engaged in. I should have been an artist. I have the soul of an artist, the temperament of an artist, the intellect of an artist.
Well, then why aren't you an artist?
My paintings stink.
Oh.
So you find me a swindler instead. Degrading, but a man must live.
So I've heard.
And at least it does involve the intelligence. Matching one's wits, as it were. Oh, dear me.
What's the matter?
I just remembered. I must make a note to call the florist in the morning and cancel the flowers.
What flowers?
For your funeral. You won't be needing them, will you?
Not if I can help it.
Pity. They were gorgeous. You'd have loved them.
Well, I'll try to bear up.
Well, now, to business. I suppose you've come here for your money.
Have I?
Since Augie failed me, I'm afraid I'll have to pay. By the way, you're not going to hold this unpleasantness with Augie against me, are you?
A little thing like that? Don't be silly.
I knew you'd understand. It was a natural move on my part. Anyone would have done the same, rather than pay. You would have yourself.
I wouldn't have used Augie.
Neither shall I next time. But since you and I understand each other, it won't affect our dealing.
Not in the least.
Good. Then it's still just the agreed upon amount.
Yes, the agreed upon amount.
Excellent. I may not have it all here, though. We'll see how much is in the safe. Just a moment.
Afraid this isn't quite enough. Let me count it.
Don't you ever keep that safe locked?
I never can remember the combination. No, this is only 12,000.
Only 12,000?
Yes. You see, I really didn't expect you. If you'll come to the office in the morning, I'll give you the other three. Will you be there?
Unless I wake up in the meantime. Good night, Mr. Stanton. Well-equipped office, hasn't he?
Yes, very.
And a well-equipped receptionist.
Oh, what do you want?
What do I want? We'll get around to that later. Right now, I want to see Mr. Stanton.
Who shall I say is calling?
Simon Templar.
Simon Templar? Not the saint.
All right, not the saint.
Oh, but you must be.
All right, I am.
Well, I wish you'd make up your mind.
Well, I'm really Bulldog Drummond, but I'm traveling incognito. Now, may I see Mr. Stanton?
Just a moment. Secretary.
Oh, hello.
Ah, yes. Templar. What is it, sir? What is it?
I'd like to see Mr. Stanton.
Mr. Stanton is a very busy man, sir. Very busy.
He'll see me.
Well, now, I don't know.
Ah, but I do know.
As a matter of fact, I don't believe he's in yet. Don't believe he is.
Well, I'll wait.
Can't I help you?
Have you got $3,000?
The $3,000.
$3,000 to go with 12.
I don't understand.
I didn't think you would. I'll wait for Mr. Stanton.
Very well, if you insist. Very well. Come inside. You can wait there.
Thanks.
The name is Linda.
Well, I hope you'll be here when I get back.
I'll make a point of it.
Lead on, Mr. Briggs.
You can wait in my office. This door right here. Go on in.
Thanks.
Do you... Oh...
Mr. Stanton.
Linda, where's Briggs?
Isn't he in his office?
I've been buzzing. No answer. Go find him, will you?
Yes, Mr. Stanton. He was here a little while ago.
I've just been put to sleep, and with you in my dreams, I don't want to wake up.
But what happened?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Where's Mr. Briggs?
I wouldn't know.
Is he the one who knocked you out?
I wouldn't be surprised.
But why?
That, as they say, is the question.
And why did he tell you that Mr. Stanton wasn't in?
That, as they say... Say, how many questions are there? And as long as questions seem to be in order, allow me... Is Mr. Stanton in?
Yes, he's been in all morning, so I couldn't understand.
Look,
what...
help me up, will you?
Oh, of course.
Thanks.
What?
Nice. Leaning on you. I must remember to get knocked out more often.
Do you think you can walk?
Probably, but I don't feel inclined to find out.
Well, we can't just stand here with our arms around each other.
Can't we?
Well, on second thought, perhaps we can. On third thought, we can. Here comes Mr. Stanton.
Well, isn't this chummy?
This is Mr. Templar, Mr. Stanton. He's just had a frightful experience, and I...
Frightful? Quite the contrary, I'd say.
I mean, he was knocked out.
Naturally. One look at you and any man...
I mean, literally.
With a sap, a blackjack.
What? Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
But that's incredible. Who? Why?
I'm afraid you'll have to ask your secretary.
Oh, yes, Briggs. Where is he?
I can't find him, Mr. Stanton. He seems to have left the office.
Could he have left without your seeing him?
Yes, Mr. Templar. Through the back.
But are you trying to say that Briggs knocked you out, Mr. Templar?
Is it so hard to believe?
I just don't understand it.
Well, I came here for sugar, so I suppose he decided to give me my lump.
Quite good. Ah, yes, sugar. You want the 3,000. I'll get it for you, Mr. Templar.
All right.
And we're agreed this settles my account with you, eh?
Yes, Stanton, it does. But I still have an account to settle with Mr. Briggs. Hello, Linda.
Oh, Mr. Templar. I didn't expect to see you.
I invited you for dinner. Did you think I'd stand you up?
I mean, under the circumstances.
What circumstances?
Haven't you heard? They've found Briggs.
Good. I'll settle with him later. Right now...
But aren't you afraid you'll be seen?
Now, don't tell me you have a jealous husband.
I don't have a husband.
There, you see, life can be beautiful.
But the police...
are a very dull topic of conversation. I prefer...
But they're looking for you.
For me?
Yes.
So I'll buy a dog license.
It's not about a dog license. I told you, they've found Briggs.
So you did. What's he been saying about me?
Nothing. Dead men never do.
Well, then, dead men?
Yes, didn't you know? He's been murdered.
I beg your pardon, monsieur. Would you care to order now, sir?
I'll be very honest with you, Captain. I'm not a bit hungry.
But, monsieur, may I suggest...
No, thank you.
But the chef has prepared pheasant under glass.
Tell the chef to have one on me.
Very well, monsieur.
Now, Linda, what were we talking about?
Oh, Simon.
So I'm suspect number one.
Yes. Did you do it?
Kill Briggs? I hardly knew him. I only kill old friends.
You don't seem to realize how serious this is.
My conscience is clear, and I've got a good lawyer. Tell me something about Stanton, Linda.
What about him?
What's his racket?
Why, he's in the real estate business.
So it says on his door, but what's his racket?
I don't understand.
I wonder.
All I know is Mr. Stanton has some big project underway. He's been selling stock in it.
So that's it.
What?
The racket.
I don't know about it being a racket. It's a business deal. I thought it was legitimate.
Look, you don't pay off somebody to the tune of $15,000 to shut him up about a legitimate business deal.
Did Mr. Stanton do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know much about it. I've only worked for him a short while. Who did he pay off?
Me.
You? But you said you didn't know.
I didn't. But then we all make mistakes.
You mean Mr. Stanton is a swindler, and he thought you found out, so he paid you to shut up?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And you accepted his money?
Well, it seemed a shame to spoil his fun, but I'll contribute it to a worthy cause. Do you feel like a worthy cause?
But what made Mr. Stanton think that you knew?
Briggs, obviously. He must have been blackmailing Stanton in my name.
Why your name?
If I say so myself, Linda, and I do, it's a name that carries weight with the underworld.
But why didn't he use his own name?
He anticipated Augie.
What?
Blackmail is a hazardous occupation. Briggs wanted to avoid the hazards. So he used my name, probably intending to send a messenger for the money. But Stanton jumped the gun by sending Augie after me.
Who is Augie?
One of nature's mistakes.
That's not very specific.
If I were any more specific about Augie, I'd spoil your appetite and it's time for dinner. So let's forget about Augie and order, shall we?
Taxi!
You don't want a taxi, Mr. Templer. I got a car right here.
Well, speak of the devil.
Were you speaking of the devil, Mr. Templer?
Figuratively, Augie.
Oh.
Linda, this is Augie.
I see.
Likewise. I am charming to have met you. It is a pleasure. Now, scram.
What?
Scram.
I'm afraid you'd better scram, Linda.
But will you be all right?
Yes, I'm sure Augie will take care of me, won't you, Augie?
Yeah. Now, look, sister, you don't scram so good. You want I should show you how?
No, she don't want you should show her how. Go on, Linda. I'll call you later.
All right, Simon. I'll be waiting.
And you, Mr. Templer, get in the car.
But, Augie...
You heard me.
Me a gun again. Augie, this is where I came in.
You mean this is where you get in? Go ahead.
Oh, all right, Augie.
Only this time, I drive.
Oh, I'm hurt. You didn't like my driving.
So you're hurt. I let you drive, we'll both be hurt. My left hand stays in my lap with the gun. So just sit quiet.
I see Stanton changed his mind.
About what?
Firing you.
Why should he fire me?
He was very upset by last night's fiasco.
Well, Mr. Stanton is not a man to hold a grudge.
Oh, I see.
Besides which, I know too much.
About what?
Things.
Well, I'm glad you've kept your job. I'd hate to be taken for a ride by a really efficient hoodlum.
That's no way to talk, Mr. Templer. I'll have you know I ain't no hoodlum.
I'm sorry, I stand corrected.
You'll sit. Right where you are.
Yes, Augie.
And no tricks this time.
No, Augie.
We ain't gonna have another Fabasco.
No, Augie.
I am a careful driver.
So I see. But now let's see how you do with my foot on yours.
Hey!
Just watch where you're going, Augie.
Get off my foot!
All right, Augie.
Hey!
Congratulations, Augie. You're really alert. The way you grabbed that wheel, of course, when you grab the wheel, I grab the gun.
Oh, this is getting monotonous.
Well, I'm willing to quit if you are.
Believe me, Mr. Templer, I am giving it serious consideration.
Master Templar.
As you live and breathe.
Quite. But where's Augie?
He met with another Fabasco.
I beg your pardon.
You are too, Stanton. And you can cancel the flowers again. I'm still alive.
Why, of course you are. Why shouldn't you? Oh, dear me. Did you think that Augie was trying to kill you again?
Wasn't he?
Dear me, no. I simply asked him to bring you here.
He doesn't extend a very cordial invitation.
No, I'm afraid not.
But here I am anyway, Stanton, so what do you want?
It's rather difficult to ask without Augie.
It shouldn't be hard to ask. It might be hard to get.
Yes, but since Augie failed again, why did you come?
To find out why you sicked him on me again. I understood that when you paid me off this morning, we were quits.
Ah, but that was before the murder. That alters matters.
How?
You have $15,000 of mine.
Yours?
I don't wish to discuss ethics, Mr. Templar. Let's just view this pragmatically as simply a bit of tit-for-tat, as it were.
Very well, pragmatic tit-for-tat. What does it mean?
I paid you $15,000 for silence. I thought you might care to repay me the 15 for same.
What would I want you to be silent about?
Your whereabouts. The police are looking for the man who was in Stanton's office this morning.
I see.
If you were here in Augie's custody, I could offer you the choice of freedom or arrest. But since Augie once again failed me, the whole matter becomes an academic question.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't blame me for trying. After all, you would have done the same. In fact, you did the same, eh? Every man for himself. And no hard feelings, right?
Quite. Good night, Mr. Stanton. It is a bull fiddle. Linda, do you have a key to the office?
Yes.
Good. I'll meet you there in 20 minutes.
Why?
Because I don't have a key.
I mean, why do you want to get into the office?
To find something.
What?
A clue.
What clue?
How should I know? I haven't found it yet.
But you expect to?
With your help.
All right, I'll be there.
But look out for Stanton.
Why?
I have an idea he'll be coming, too.
Oh, did you ask him?
No, but I don't think he needs an invitation.
And you don't want him to see me?
Not until we're in the office. I don't want to scare him away.
Oh, it begins to sound ominous.
You afraid?
Not as long as you're there.
I wonder how I ought to take that.
As a compliment.
All right. I'll be waiting, Linda. Hurry.
Am I late, Simon?
Right on the nose.
Oh, good. I hurried.
Well, let's go in.
All right.
Now, don't turn on the light. I don't want Stanton to know we're here.
Whatever you say. But what makes you so sure he's coming?
I just paid him a visit. I could see he was packing. He's preparing to leave town, and he'll probably want to clean out the office first.
He's running away?
So it would seem.
Well, now what do we do?
I'm going in back to see what I can find. You stay here at your desk. If Stanton comes, buzz me.
You mean I stay alone in the dark?
Well, I'll only be a minute, then we'll stay together in the dark.
All right. Can you find your way to the door?
Yeah, I found it. I'll be right back.
All right.
Showed up.
Not yet.
Well, I'll be right out.
Did you find what you were looking for?
Yes.
Already?
Already.
Amazing.
You don't know the saint. I'll be right out and give you a chance to learn.
Simon?
Yes, Linda?
What did you find?
Shh. Do you see what I see?
I don't see anything. It's so dark.
At the door. Silhouette.
Oh.
Hello, Stanton.
What?
Oh. Here, let me turn the light on for you.
Oh, Templar and Linda.
Yes, we've been waiting for you, Stanton.
How did you know?
Elementary, my dear Stanton.
Seems you've beaten me, Templar, to everything except the draw. Put up your hands.
I thought gunplay was out of your line, Mr. Stanton.
Sometimes one is forced to take matters into one's own hands. But I assure you, I don't relish it. So please do as I say, both of you. Because if I'm forced to shoot you, I know I shall be quite ill.
What are you going to do?
If you two will just stand quietly with your hands raised.
I have a better idea. He's between us, Linda. He can't watch us both at the same time.
Get over next to her, Templar.
Ordinarily, there's nothing I'd rather do. But under the circumstances...
If you don't obey me, much as I hate the sight of blood, I shall be forced to shoot you.
In other words, Stanton, there comes a time when even you are willing to commit murder.
Only when absolutely necessary.
It's a nice distinction.
I don't care to discuss it. Now, will you get over next to Linda?
On the contrary. Linda, while he's watching me, now's your chance. Clout him with that standing ashtray.
No, you don't.
All right, Stanton, now that you've turned to her, I've got you covered. Drop your gun.
All right. Don't shoot. As I've told you, I can't stand the sight of blood, especially my own.
Pick up his gun, Linda.
Oh, I've got it.
Dear me. Perhaps Augie isn't so incompetent after all. Gunplay can be quite complicated.
Well, we'll send you where you can learn the art from experts. Let me have his gun, Linda. And then you can call the police.
All right.
The police? But you can't.
Can't we?
You promised if I paid you...
I didn't promise a thing, Stanton. That was Briggs.
What?
Besides, there's more than just a swindle to settle. Let's not overlook the murder.
Quite right, sir. You put the police on to me, you'll have to face them for the murder charge.
I wouldn't try to pin the murder on me, Stanton. You see, I could point out that Briggs was blackmailing you in my name. You found out about it, and...
Are you trying to say that I killed Briggs?
It's as good a story as that I did.
Why, you have no proof, Templar.
We'll see. I came here this morning at your invitation. Briggs was terrified. He didn't know you and I had met before. He thought if I talked to you, you'd find out I wasn't the one who was blackmailing you. And it might give Briggs his game away, so he knocked me out to keep me from meeting you.
That still doesn't prove anything.
Ah, yes, proof. The proof of the pudding is in the eating, and you can't eat your proof and have it, too.
What on earth does that mean?
Nothing at all. Go on, Linda, call the police.
Yes, Simon.
Templar!
Shh, please, the lady is phoning.
Hello, operator? I want the police, please. Hello, police? Can you send a car to the Stanton Real Estate Company? 8th and Hudson Street. We have a swindler and a murderer, that's right. Yes, that's right, 8th and Hudson. Goodbye.
Templar, you're making a big mistake.
I know, but I wanted to give Linda a chance to complete the call, Stanton. Naturally, she wouldn't have if I'd said she is the one who killed Briggs.
Simon!
What?
Linda, it looks like we never will get that chance to sit in the dark together.
This is absurd. Why would I want to kill Briggs?
Because you were in on his scheme with him, and you were afraid if he were caught at it and talked, he'd implicate you. So you killed him while I was unconscious.
Why, you're...
You're crazy is the usual line at this point.
Well, you are. I had nothing to do with Briggs.
Yet when I came here and asked to see Stanton, you left your desk and went in to get Briggs instead of talking to him on the intercom.
Well,
You wanted to talk to him behind my back in case he wanted to cook up a story.
No.
Then why didn't you use the intercom? It's connected with his office and it works. I checked.
So that's what you were looking for. You think you're so clever. Well, you can just...
Linda, careful. Remember, I'm a saint.
Taxi!
You don't want a taxi, Mr. Templar. I got a car here.
Oh, no, Augie. Not again.
What's the matter, Mr. Templar? Don't you like my company?
It's not that, Augie, but I'm warning you. If you keep driving a hot car around town, some nice policeman is going to speak harshly to you and pull you in.
Mr. Templar?
Yes, Augie?
To tell you the truth, it ain't a hot car.
Not even slightly warm?
Nope. I bought it. Paid cash. But... Yeah, I wouldn't like it to go no further.
Oh, I understand, Augie. Don't worry. I won't say a word. I realize what it would do to your reputation.
You have been listening to another adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
This year, the Forest Service of the United States Department of Agriculture prevails on the vacationing and motoring public to exercise extreme care with fire while living, working, or visiting in or near forest and woodland areas. Remember, friends, it only takes a moment's carelessness or thoughtlessness to set fire loose in the forest. So let's all be careful. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
The night script of the Saint was written by Jerome Epstein. Our cast tonight included Francis Robinson, Arthur Q. Bryan, Ted Von Eltz, and Donald Woods. The music was composed and conducted by Vaughn Dexter. The Saint, transcribed based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Sapir production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price can now be seen in the Universal International picture Curtain Call at Cactus Creek. And all you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer is Don Stanley. Nightbeat and Top Secret, two suspense-filled, action-packed shows, come to you tomorrow night on NBC.
Make a date. Hear Top Secret with Lona Massey as the counter-espionage agent and Night Beat, the story of Chicago after dark. Both top shows tomorrow night on NBC. Next, it's Sam Spade, then Summer Symphony with Benny Goodman on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking.
Willie Inch, did you say?
Just a second. Do you want to talk to a fellow named Willie Inch, which I doubt?
No.
He says he's got to see you, got to.
Who is he?
I'll ask. Mr. Wolfe doesn't recognize your name, Mr. Inch. He wants to know who you are. Just a second, I'll tell him. Mr. Inch says he's a sneak thief. He says you never heard of him, but he's heard of you. Should I tell him to get lost?
Wait a minute, Archie. Ask him what he wants.
Inch, Mr. Wolfe wants to know what you want to see him about. A phony murder rap. This is a phony murder rap.
It'd have to be, wouldn't it, Archie?
How do you mean?
Phony, I mean. Did you ever hear of a sneak thief committing murder if it could possibly be avoided? Yes, Archie. Tell Mr. Inch. I'll listen to his story.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-borne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe. Created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
When Mr. Wolfe and I talk about this little difficulty, he calls it the case of Archie Goodwin and how he got hooked. However, I call it the case of the disappearing diamonds. I prefer my title. He prefers his. Anyhow, it started with an improbable character named Willie Inch.
That'll be our sneak thief, Archie. Let him in.
Okay, boss.
Okay.
Inch?
Yeah.
Come in. In there. I'll follow you. Mr. Wolfe, this is your client.
Mr. Inch?
Yeah.
Tall fellow. Must be over 6 feet six. Sit down.
Where?
Archie?
Here, Mr. Inch. This ought to be comfortable.
Where, Mr. Inch?
Look, Mr. Wolfe. They're going to claim that I killed a woman I never even touched. And I'm going to fry for something I never even done.
All right, Mr. Inch. How did you kill her?
I didn't. I never killed nobody in my life.
Mr. Inch, you say you're a thief. Can you prove it?
I got a record. Why?
I was wondering about that bulge in your pocket.
Oh. Oh, here? It's a silver cigarette lighter, ain't it? I guess it sort of dropped into my pocket as I was going by. You see the way it happened?
Never mind, Mr. Inch. Now tell me how you didn't kill the woman for whose murder you will fry.
Well, Mr. Wolfe, sir, it was like this. There was a window half open, you see, and I happened to crawl inside the house. But hey now.
Well, Mr. Inch?
This is just between us, ain't it?
Possibly.
Well, how do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
Mr. Wolfe said possibly.
Oh. Well, okay. So I happen to find myself in the bedroom, see? So I happen to sort of roam around, and I hear there's like a party going on. You know, people and music. So I lock the door.
So go on.
Let him tell it his own way, Archie. Well, Mr. Inch?
So that's the mistake I make.
The mistake?
Maybe I leave my fingerprints on the door.
So?
So later, a dame gets herself knocked off in the same room. And they look for fingerprints. And they find mine. I'm it. That's all. I got a record. So the chair.
I see. Pitiful case, isn't it, Archie?
Very, very mournful.
Inch.
Yes, sir?
I presume you came away with some souvenirs?
Oh, nothing. It wasn't worth the trouble. You know, just odds and ends, junk.
Have you got the junk with you?
Yeah.
Let me see.
Here.
Cigarette case, platinum. Lighter, gold. Vanity case, gold. That's all?
Positively.
Junk, the man says.
I promise nothing, Mr. Inch, but it might be better if you told the truth.
Me?
You.
Oh, well.
One square cut emerald ring.
I just happened to find it. Here's something more.
A pewter ashtray.
Look, the room is dark. I can't see. piles of coats under beds and hats and handbags. I take what I find.
Why didn't you turn on the lights?
One of these big standing lamps. You know what I mean.
Go on.
I bump into it, and it scares the living... I mean, it scares me.
Joe?
I turn the switch. It don't work.
Archie.
That sounds like the law, boss.
The law?
Stay right where you are, Willie. May I suggest there is a way to find out, Archie?
Okay, okay. We don't want any.
Good morning, Goodwin. You remember me, your old friend, Inspector Kramer? Two gentlemen with me are also with the department, Perley and Ostrakovich. May we come in?
What do you want?
We want a murderer, and we want some rocks worth 250 grand. Does that answer your question?
What makes you think you'll find all those goodies here?
Come in, men. We know Willie Inch is here. Where is he?
Now, just a second.
We're coming with you, Goodwin.
Okay, Inspector, come along. The law.
That's Willie Inch. Frisk him. No weapons? Okay, just put the cuffs on him.
Inspector Kramer.
Oh, yes. Hello, Wolf.
I want to tell you something about this man whom you and your men have so bravely captured in my office.
You don't need to tell me about him, Wolf. We know about him.
Do you indeed?
Yes. We know he killed Mrs. Florence Avery March and stripped $250,000 worth of diamonds off her. That's all we need to know.
I didn't do no such a thing.
Where's the ice, Willie?
I never even seen none, honest.
Take him away, boys. I'll make the charge when I get back to my office.
Wait. Mr. Wolf, sir.
Take him.
Look, I ain't done nothing, I tell you.
Inspector Kramer.
Yeah. We're going to have a little talk now, aren't we?
If necessary.
How do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
Mr. Wolf means you're going to have a little talk, if necessary.
Very funny. I will now draw up a chair and show you why it's necessary. In the first place, $250,000 worth of diamonds makes it necessary.
Archie, if you please, a bottle of beer.
Okay. Will the inspector name his poison?
You know I never drink on duty.
And just for me, Archie, please.
On my way. While I opened a bottle of imported beer, it occurred to me that I had something to be grateful for. At least I wasn't in Willie Inch's enormous shoes. And as I went back to the office, I had time to wonder why Mr. Wolf would stick his fat neck out for a no-good like Willie.
Thank you, Archie, and sit down, Archie. Inspector Kramer has a theory that may amuse you.
Nero Wolf's office. It's for you, Inspector.
Hello, Kramer. Yeah? A gold cigarette holder? That's all? Okay.
Inspector, do you realize that you have already taken a great deal of my time?
Archie.
Yes, Inspector?
The great Mr. Wolf just said I had a theory that might amuse you. Would you care to hear it?
I can hardly wait.
Okay. My theory is that both Wolf and you are receivers of stolen property and possibly guilty of murder conspiracy.
So far, you got me in stitches.
Willie Inch, with a record as long as your arm, robs the home of Mrs. Florence Avery Marsh. He strangles her with a silk scarf, takes the diamond she's wearing, grabs everything else that's lying around, and then what?
Is it a question?
I'll tell you what.
He will, too. Archie, listen.
Then Inch brings the stuff here, the stuff that's piled on Wolf's desk and the diamonds. You want me to tell you where the diamonds are? They're in that safe right there.
Inspector Kramer, I know nothing about the diamonds. They are not in the safe and they're not in the house. Now you can take my word for it, or you can get a search warrant and make a fool of yourself. I'm going to have lunch.
By 2 o'clock, the newspapers were full of the murder of Mrs. Florence Avery March. The suspect was already in custody, caught at the home of Nero Wolf, well-known private investigator. Some of the stolen jewelry had been recovered, but not the diamonds. Then we had a visit from Mr. Anson Stark, who had opened Mrs. March's door and found her dead. Stark was a big athletic guy of about 30 or so, with the large, capable hands of a surgeon or a laboratory worker. He seemed annoyed at the inconvenience we caused him, but that was only natural.
That's the story, Mr. Wolf. I don't see how I can add anything more to it.
You had known Mrs. March for several years, huh?
Casually.
When you broke the door open, was it difficult?
Not very.
You were the first into the room?
There were three or four of us. We pushed in together.
You saw the body of Mrs. March immediately?
She was lying across the bed that was heaped with coats and hats and handbags.
You knew she was dead?
Of course not. In fact, somebody else discovered that she had been choked to death.
And who discovered that the diamonds were gone?
I don't know. I didn't.
Were there many diamonds, Mr. Stark?
No, just a few, but big ones. She wore them on a pendant around her neck.
Mr. Stark, I want to thank you again for having been so patient.
I have been patient, Mr. Wolfe. I have my own business to attend to.
Which is?
Oh, I have a small but hopeful enterprise. Electronics, tubes for radio and television. Mostly experimental.
Well, that reminds me, Mr. Stark. When you entered the bedroom, was the light on or off?
Let me see. Of course, it was on. It must have been on. Why?
Just curiosity, Mr. Stark.
Oh? Anything more?
That's all, except thank you for coming here. Archie, will you take Mr. Stark to the door?
Mr. Stark departed like a man who'd been delayed by a petty annoyance. A few minutes later, the door buzzed. And I went, expecting anything. Anything but what was standing on the threshold when I opened up. A honey blonde. Or, to put it another way, a blonde honey. I said hello. No, more like hello.
Are you Mr. Wolfe?
I'm his assistant, Archie Goodwin, and what can we do for you?
Well, I'm Valerie Ladd.
And I'm Archie Goodwin. Or did I tell you that?
Well, that's exactly where I came in. Well, I mean, where I thought you were going to ask me to come in.
Oh, come in, come in. I'm sorry.
Well, is he? Is he here?
Wolf?
Mm-hmm.
Does he know you?
No.
Is he expecting you?
No.
I see.
Of course you don't see, do you? Well, this is it, Mr. Goodwin. I'm a writer. Well, I may not look like it, but that's what I am. And I want to do a profile, a character study of Mr. Wolf for a magazine.
Oh.
Well, what's wrong?
Well, you see, there's a writer named Rex Stout.
Oh, I know. He's written a lot about Nero Wolfe, but... Well, can't I write about him, too?
I don't know if he's going to like it, but you can't be shot for trying. Come on. Mr. Wolfe, this is Valerie Ladd.
Pardon me for not rising, Miss Ladd. It is not impolite. It is merely impracticable.
Miss Ladd wants to write about you for a magazine.
Please, Mr. Wolfe.
Nonsense.
Mr. Wolfe, if I could just spend a few hours with you, that would be enough.
Would it indeed?
Oh, yes.
Have you written much, Miss Ladd?
Oh, reams.
You know, the habits of writers interest me.
The habits?
Yeah, the writing habits. For instance, do you use a pen or a pencil? Do you dictate, or like most writers, do you do your own typing?
Mr. Wolfe, if you knew the hours and days and years that I've pounded the typewriter.
Of course. Archie.
Yes, sir?
Why don't you take Miss Ladd up and show her the orchids?
You never know about Nero Wolfe. At least I never do. This was something I would have bet against 1,000 to 1. Couldn't understand it. But I certainly couldn't complain.
Archie, look at this one. Oh, did you ever see anything so gorgeous?
Very pretty.
Oh, they're all just beyond belief.
Yeah?
But you're not even looking at them, Archie.
What? Oh!
Archie, are you always like this?
What do you mean, like this?
Well, so distant and preoccupied.
Honey, you got me wrong. Completely. I was thinking.
Oh.
Yeah, about telephone numbers.
Well, it's a lovely thing to think about. What can you think about telephone numbers?
I was thinking how some girls have them and some don't.
Oh, I see. Archie, I apologize.
For what?
I did have you wrong. You're not a bit distant.
I can be a lot closer than this, honey. What is it?
What's what?
The number.
Oh, it's in the book.
Yeah? I wonder.
Sound as if you don't believe me.
Oh, I believe you, but here's a telephone book here. Let's lick it up together, shall we?
Archie.
Yeah?
I'm afraid I lied to you.
I was afraid of that, too.
Are you angry?
Well, I can take no for an answer, honey. Even when it's hard to take.
Archie, I've changed my mind. I want you to have my number. And I want you to use it, too.
You know, honey, I'm beginning to take an interest in this dialogue. Let's have it.
Okay. Olympia 9, 3659.
And a very, very pretty number it is.
Valerie, Lad, two D's?
Mm-hmm.
Olympia, 93659. Honey blonde, gorgeous.
Oh.
Spelled gorgeous. There. What are we doing tonight, Olympia 9?
And I said that you were distant and preoccupied.
We were talking about tonight.
All right, Archie. Yes, I'd love it. Oh, these orchids, they're really beyond belief. And you won't even look at them.
True. I'm too busy looking at you.
Well, how do I look, Archie?
Beyond belief, honey. Beyond belief. Well, there goes the Goodwin luck again. It's a house phone, partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Okay. He wants us to come down.
Archie.
Yes, dear.
Even if he says no, we still have a date?
Honey, though the heavens fall. When we entered the office, Mr. Wolf was frowning over a sheet of letter paper in his hand. He looked up and tossed the paper to me.
There's a peculiar thing, Archie. The sheet of letter paper just arrived. Since Miss Ladd is interested in detection, show it to her.
Thank you. Well, some sort of code, isn't it? Q-W-E-R-T-Y-U-I-O-P. That's all. What do you suppose it means?
You're kidding.
Archie.
Oh.
What? Did I say something wrong?
No.
Miss Ladd, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I haven't time for an interview just now. Goodbye, Miss Ladd.
Oh, but Mr. Wolf.
Goodbye, Archie.
Say goodbye to Mr. Wolf and let's go, honey.
Goodbye.
That's the way things can be around here. Well, here's the door, and shall we pause for station identification?
Hmm? Oh. I'll wipe it off, Archie. There.
Thanks.
What happened, Archie?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, Mr. Wolf, I mean.
Oh.
Why did he suddenly want me to go?
Well, I'll tell you, though I don't know whether I should. That code message he showed you?
Yes.
QWERTY up.
You remember?
Yeah, sure. Because I use a typewriter. From left to right, it's the first bank of letters on any typewriter.
I see. It was a test.
Yeah. And you flunked it, baby. You're no writer.
Archie, I can explain
it. Sure. Tonight.
Tonight, Archie. You do believe me, don't you, Archie?
Oh, of course, baby, of course.
Well, it's just that I was there at the party, I mean, when poor Florence was murdered. Then I read in the paper about, well, how they caught the man at Nero Wolf's. And I always wanted to be a writer, so I thought if I could get an exclusive interview and, well, that would be a good way to start my career, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Pardon me a second, will you, Valerie? I got to make a phone call. There's a booth. It'll only take a minute or two.
Nero Wolf speaking.
Archie, I'm at the Riviera with Valerie Ladd.
I'm happy for you, Archie.
I will remind you that I have not seen you since Valerie left the house.
I was otherwise occupied, Archie.
With orchids.
With orchids? What do you want, Archie?
Now look, with that typewriter gag, you practically told me she was a phony, didn't you?
Of course.
Just for the record, how did you know?
Have you looked at her fingernails? She never touched a typewriter in her life. But I wanted to be sure.
Okay, now, do you want me to tell you something?
You mean that your charming companion, Valerie, was at the party when Mrs. March was murdered?
How did you know that?
Simple, Archie. I got a list of the guests from Inspector Kramer. Among them was the name of Valerie Ladway. Simple?
Ladway. Lad. Yeah, sure. Okay, what am I supposed to do about it?
Just hang on, Archie. Just hang on.
I went back to the honey blonde, the beautiful phony Valerie Ladd, Ladway. I mean, I went back to the table where she should have been, but she wasn't there. I sat down and waited. Looked at my watch, 11:24. 11:32, no Miss Ladway. 11:45, I finally realized that not only Valerie, but her coat and bag were also absent. I called the waiter.
Yes, sir?
What happened to my friend?
The young lady left some time ago, sir.
Okay, give me the bill.
She paid it, sir.
She did?
Yes, sir. In fact, she said you gave her the money for it.
Yeah? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Well, I didn't know it, but she is certainly right.
Oh, oh, my. Well, Archie, this is most thoughtless of you.
Sorry, I lost my keys. My money, too.
Your keys, Archie?
Yeah. Glad you were still up.
You lost Miss Ladway, too?
Definitely. I'm going to bed.
Good night, Archie.
You think it's funny, don't you?
Yes, Archie. Yes, yes, I do.
Good night, Mr. Wolf.
Archie.
Yeah?
Before you retire, one thing.
What?
Open the safe, will you? And leave it open.
Why?
Because there's nothing in it of importance. And it's a valuable safe, and I don't want it damaged. Good night, Archie.
At about 2 o'clock in the morning, I thought I heard a noise. I got up, put on the rest of my pajamas, picked up my gun, and went down to the office. The man had his head in the safe, and everything was scattered all over. I stepped inside the door. Put your hands behind your back and stand up.
Huh? Okay.
Now, just what are you after, When I woke up, I was alone on the office floor. I did not feel good. The place looked as if a hurricane had struck it. Every file drawer had been emptied. I felt a draft from somewhere. Got to my feet, trying not to joggle my head too much. It was the front door standing open. I closed it gently. Then very, very gently, I groped my way to the kitchen for ice, water, and towels.
Archie!
What? Oh, didn't you hear me scream?
No. Is it bad?
It's better.
You're angry, aren't you?
Nuts.
What, Archie?
I said nuts, Mr. Wolf, nuts.
I'm sorry about what happened.
Yeah, you expected it.
But I didn't expect you to be caught by somebody behind you. You must have known there would have been two of them.
Now, how would I know that? How?
Think of Mr. Ladway's delicate hands. Do you believe she intended to open the safe herself?
You think she stole my keys and so on? Well, let me tell you... Hey, wait. That guy was digging in the safe that... Then who hit me in the head?
Archie, someday you'll be the death of me. In the morning, will you tell Inspector Kramer I'd like to see him here?
Fuming and protesting, Kramer arrived about 1:30. When I let him into the office, Mr. Wolf was gazing thoughtfully at the ground floor plan of the house of the late Mrs. Florence Avery March. We'd gotten it from the original architects. Wolf looked up and almost smiled.
Thank you for coming to me, Inspector. You know how difficult it is for me to come to you.
Okay, what's up?
I take it you haven't found the diamonds.
No, not yet. We'll break Inch down, though. Don't think we won't.
Oh, I'm sure. But this is what I want to ask you, and it's quite serious.
Okay, all right, what?
After the body was found, your men arrived at the house before anyone left.
Right.
And before anybody was allowed to go, every person was searched thoroughly.
Nobody could have gotten a pin or a needle out of that place.
I know something about police methods, and I believe you. Now, how thoroughly did you search the house itself?
Wolf, look. We've got that floor plan you're studying now. There are no hidden closets. Every square inch of that house has been examined. The diamonds aren't there. Willie Inch killed the dame and snatched the diamonds. What he did with them, we'll find out.
Possibly. Goodbye, Inspector.
At approximately 3:15, the postman arrived with an envelope for me. The envelope contained my keys, the bill from the Riviera, and the money left after the check was paid. At approximately 5:07 p.m., I discovered that Wolf had been using the telephone all by himself. He explained. He was going to have a party.
He had invited all of the guests who were at Mrs. Florence Avery March's somewhat fatal party, including Anson Stark, Willie Inch, and Valerie. Nero Wolfe, the natural-born ham, he made an entrance that would have been worthy of Queen Victoria in her heavier days. He sat in his oversized throne behind his oversized desk and beamed at the peasants. Valerie moved toward me.
I'm sorry, Archie, but you must know why I did it.
Why?
Well, you said I wasn't a writer. I wanted to prove that you weren't a detective.
Did you take the stuff while we were dancing?
I could have, couldn't I?
You could have bumped me on the head last night, too, couldn't you?
Oh, Archie.
Let it go. It was humiliating, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you realize the purpose of this party. We want to know who killed Mrs. March and what became of her diamonds. Mr. Inch.
Yeah?
When you visited the room where the body was found, the room was dark?
The bulb was burned out. I tried to turn it on.
If there had been a body on the bed, would you have seen it?
Maybe. With all those coats, maybe not.
Sure. Mr. Stark?
Yes, I said the light was on. Perhaps I was wrong. What of it?
You're engaged in the manufacture of tubes for radio and television, huh?
I told you that.
Inspector Kramer.
Yeah, why?
A light bulb was found in the wastebasket in the room where Mrs. March died.
Yeah. Like you said, we tried the bulb in the socket and it worked. So what?
One more question. Does anybody remember whether Mr. Stark was carrying a bundle or a package under his arm when he arrived at Mrs. March's party?
Oh, I do, Mr. Wolfe. I think he had a box of flowers.
That's true. I did bring flowers.
No, Mr. Stark. That box contained two parts of a light bulb and some adhesive. During the party, you strangled Mrs. March, put the diamonds into the light bulb, assembled the thing, and screwed it into the lamp socket. Archie, stop him! Really, Archie, it was quite simple. Light bulbs are only a stem glass bowl and a brass sheath. Yet nobody, including the police, would think of looking inside one. Mr. Stark could come back and collect his treasure any time after the excitement had died down. What's the matter, Archie?
I got a headache.
Valerie Ladd. Ladby. Poor girl. She and whoever the man was with her must have thought the diamonds were here. That bump on your head will be better in the morning. Bottle of beer, please, Archie.
I'm going to bed.
Yes. Why must you place such confidence in women? Remember what happened to Mark Antony and Samson and Archie Goodwin. Good night, Archie.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by Mindred Lord was based on the characters created by Rex Stout, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. This is an Edwin Fadiman production. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and Gigi Pearson, Bud Heaston, Gray Stafford, Dick Ryan, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Midnight Ride. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna, as those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives, and I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime. Don't get me wrong, I love Budapest. From Budapest come goulashes and shardashes. Shardashes being something you dance and goulash being something you eat if you go for all that paprika. Me, I love it. So, when I got that telegram, I took the first train to Hungary. Maybe I better tell you about the telegram first. Dear Mr. Lime, it said, my bank is going to be robbed and I need your help. It was signed Fekete, evidently a man's name, nobody I knew. I knew all about bank robberies, however, and I was dying to help. Besides, as I say, I love paprika. So I started packing right away.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man, in today's story, Too Many Crooks.
Before calling at the bank, I stopped at a cute little flower shop I happened to notice across the way. Good morning. Would you give me something for my buttonhole? Why, Lily. Lily, what are you doing here?
We have some very pretty pink gardenias.
Oh, come on, Lily, don't tell me you don't remember me. And how are all the Corellis?
For who?
Now, give me that, Lily.
My name is Lulu.
Well, it used to be Lily, and it used to be a blonde. And the Corellis, as you know perfectly well, because he used to work for some of the best bank robbers in Central Europe. Well, what about it, honey?
Here are your gardenias, Harry. Now, get out of here.
Okay, honey, okay. No need to get in a hassle.
I'm telling you, Harry, get out.
I never was one to argue, so I took my gardenia across the street and wore it into the bank.
Mr. Fekete will see Mr. Harry Lime.
You can go in now, Mr. Lime.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Fekete will see you.
Yes, that's what I gathered.
This way, please.
Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Lime, will you please extinguish your cigarette? Mr. Fekete does not approve of smoking.
Thanks. I'll bear that in mind.
Mr. Lime.
Come in. Come in and shut the door. There's a date.
Do you mind if I sit down, Mr. Fekete, or is there a rule against that?
Sit down, sit down. You're a very impertinent young man, but I don't mind that. I am an impertinent older man. We ought to get along together very nicely.
What's your proposition, Mr. Fekete?
Yeah. What do you mean?
That's what I said. What's your proposition?
Now listen to me, Lime. I don't make propositions. I consider them.
Have it your own way, Fekete. I'm a big boy now, and I'm not so easily impressed.
What do you mean, impressed?
All this big desk, double secretary, Mr. Fekete. He'll see you now. Mr. Fekete doesn't approve of smoking, busy executive hoopla. May go down very well with the bumpkins who give you their money to invest. It doesn't mean a thing to me. You sent for me, didn't you? I crossed three national borders to get here and lost a lot of time, so don't ask me what's my proposition. What's yours, Mr. Fekete?
very good indeed. You're just the man I hoped you were. Have a cigar.
Wouldn't that be breaking the rules?
I make the rules, Mr. Lime, and I don't like cheap tobacco smoke. Now, do I enjoy being forced to distribute these very costly, custom-made Havanas to every, or what is it you call them, bumpkin, who comes into my office? I think you'll enjoy these.
Thanks.
Right?
Thanks.
Good. Now that we're a little more at ease, suppose you tell me something about yourself.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
I wish you'd stop asking me what I mean by everything I say, Fekete. I said why, and I meant why. You put private detectives on my trail. You found me. You made me a very substantial down payment on services to be rendered. And now, when I get here, you want me to tell you about myself. That's just plain silly, old man. It's obvious that if you went to all that trouble and expense to get me here, you knew about me already. I'm the one to ask the questions, not you.
Better and better. Mr. Lime, if you were just a little less notorious as a cook, I'd offer you a vice presidency in my bank.
I forgive the insult, Mr. Fegarty.
What do you mean, insult?
There you go asking me what I mean again. I meant insult.
Now, don't you get pompous on me, Lime. You are a crook, a world-famous one. You don't want to deny that.
What I don't want is very simple, Mr. Fegarty. I don't want to be a vice president of your bank.
Oh? Oh, I follow you now. Don't worry, Lime. Right. I promised you $20,000.
That's right.
It's equivalent in Hungarian pesos.
Oh, wait a minute.
And you'll get it without having to serve as an officer of this
you
bank.
You promised me $20,000, old man. There weren't any gimmicks in the agreement about the joke money you folks pass off on each other locally. I know. I carry my own microscope for reading the fine type.
Very well, very well. $20,000 it is. Don't you want to know what I expect you to do for
us? Mr. Fegarty, you keep making me repeat myself. I told you before that I'm a big boy now. If you're giving me $20,000, I can relax, not worry about asking you silly questions. You're going to get around eventually to telling me what you expect me to do for it.
Did you ever hear of a bank giving a reward?
Yes, but only after a bank robbery.
Exactly. Exactly. Only after a bank has been robbed. I'm reversing the procedure, Lyle. I'm giving the reward first.
Oh, so that's the little caper, is it? You want me to rob your bank for you?
Well, not at all, not at all. A reward is usually given for apprehending the thieves who have robbed the bank. What I want you to do, Harry, I may call you Harry.
Certainly, old man. Call me Harry if it gives you any fun.
Well, Harry, what I want you to do is to apprehend the robbers before the robbery is committed. Very clever, don't you think so? Have another cigar.
In my business, I may get in the way of an awful lot of screwy deals, but I can tell you that never in a long career have I been offered in complete seriousness a loopier proposition than Mr. Fegarty. It seems the key to the whole affair was Mr. Fegarty's junior officer in the bank, a certain Mr. Fodor.
Ladislaus Fodor is the full name, Harry. He's one of our vice presidents.
I see.
I tell you this right now, the man is an unprincipled criminal.
Oh?
And come here, and I'll show him to you. Come this way. You can see him through the glass panel.
Yes.
There he is.
Oh, that one?
Second desk to the right. With all those silly hairs pasted over his bald head. That's the man.
He was not very dangerous to me.
Fodor? Dangerous? He is the brain of a backward bird and the charm of a worm. Now that I look back on it, I can't imagine how I ever persuaded myself to be jealous of
him. Jealous? I don't follow you, old man.
If I have a fault, Harry, it is this. I do tend to be jealous. Lulu often chides me about it, and I have promised to curb the instinct, but it is a part of my
career. Lulu, you mean the girl in the flower shop across the way, that Lulu?
She is the only Lulu I know, Mr. Lyon. How does it happen that you are acquainted with
her? You see this carnation?
I see it, yes.
Lulu sold it to me, overcharged me, scandalously, as a matter of fact.
Well, Lulu is a working girl. She must live. How does it happen you know her?
What makes you think I do?
You know her name?
For one of the other customers called it up while I was still in the shop. As it happens, it was this little fellow you just pointed out to me over there, the vice president, Fodor.
Dad, vice president.
I hate to keep harping on these commercial matters, frankly, old man, but just how does my $20,000 reward come into the picture?
Let us retire to my inner office, Harry. I never tell him.
Okay, old man.
Sit down, please, Harry. Have another cigar.
My pockets are bulging with cigars now, old man. Let's concentrate on the 20,000.
Certainly, certainly. Oh, Miss Carver, Miss Carver.
Yes, Mr. Fegarty?
No matter who calls, don't disturb me. Not on any account. I'm having an important conference.
Yes, Mr. Fegarty.
Oh, jealousy, Harry. Jealousy is a terrible
thing. Yes, certainly is. Now, about this reward.
Jealousy is the green-eyed monster who doth mock the meat it feeds on. That's how the poet Shakespeare expresses it.
The poet Shakespeare said a mouthful, and now...
But still, if it had not been for jealousy, I would never have followed this Fodor into Lulu's shop. And if I hadn't done that, I would never have discovered the digging.
Digging? What digging?
What would you say, Harry, if I were to tell you that running under the street from Lulu's flower shop to this bank, there is a tunnel?
A tunnel?
What would you say if I told you that?
Well, I'd say, well, what do you know? That's what I'd say.
That's what I said when I found out about it. And that's why I say now that I mustn't ever forget to be grateful to jealousy, particularly since I've discovered that there's nothing between Lolo and Foto, or nothing serious.
And do you know what I'd say to that?
No.
A couple of rude words.
Yeah, but why?
Why? You find him scrabbling away together like a couple of chubby moles, digging away in the general direction of your bank vault, and you say there's nothing serious between them?
Tell you something, I'm sure of that. I have Lulu's word. And besides, what could she possibly see in a fat little nonentity like Fodor? No, the only one who thinks it's serious is Fodor. That's the whole point. Fodor is a dupe, a mere catch point, if it's
possible. Oh, yes, and who's the mastermind?
I am.
And what does Fodor think about that?
He languishes in ignorance. He knows nothing. And to think that he aspires, he dares to aspire to my position in the bank.
How does Lulu fit in?
I must tell you that Lulu has given me some reason to hope that she will someday make me the happiest man in the world.
And how would she do that? By giving up Fodor or sending you a big bouquet of roses? Let's get down to cases, old man. Wedding bells can ring out from Buda to Pest and back again, but I won't be there to throw any rice unless I get paid. What is it exactly you want from me? Lessons on how to help Fodor and Lulu rob your bank?
Fodor's going to do the robbing. And besides, it isn't my bank. I'm only a salary
officer. And then Fodor gives you the money to give to Lulu.
Certainly not. That would be silly.
That's just what I was thinking.
No. Every day, Fodor is supposed to take the paper money from the various cages and place it in the vault.
Yeah.
This is his responsibility.
Yeah.
Tonight, however, he will not do this. He will leave the money outside the vault, hidden in a large filing cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the entire plan has been carefully worked out, I can assure you.
All I can say is this Fodor of yours is a very cooperative type of cat's paw.
Don't call him this Fodor of yours. He isn't. He's no Fodor of mine.
Have it your own way, old man. What comes next? You, I suppose. Huh? You come a half hour later with a dark lantern and a gunny sack. You wrap up the money, join Lulu, who's been waiting for you across the street in the flower shop, and the two of you, hand in hand, move off down the road into the sunrise and also into the very choicest Hungarian hooskow. Hmm?
What is a huska?
A jail or prison, a place of forcible incarceration, a lockup for bad little bank robbers.
Not at all. It is Fodor who goes to prison.
Oh, yes? And how do you work that?
That is one of the things I want you to arrange.
Oh, I see. I'm going to have to earn that $20,000. I think we'll start by having it deposited in my name and in somebody else's bank, old man.
Why now? And why another bank?
Well, every bank in Budapest isn't going to be robbed tonight, so I think I'd prefer one of the others. And I'll take it now because I know you wouldn't want me to go to the police with what is, after all, a fairly sordid little story.
Good, but issue, but that's blackmail.
Oh, watch your language, old man. Blackmail's a nasty word. You know, all I want is protection for my poor little $20,000. I'll give you service for it, too, but I want to be absolutely positive that you're ready to meet your payroll.
Very well. You'll have your money, but you will have.
I'm going to need a few more solid facts, old man.
Well, it all began with this insane jealousy of mine for Fodor.
Oh, yeah?
I took to following him. He used to go into Lulu's flower shop at night long after it was closed. And one time he left the shutter unfastened and I went in. There were no lights in the shop itself, but I could hear voices from the basement below. I opened the trap door very carefully so as not to be heard. And what do you think I saw?
You saw Lulu, Fodor, and three men all hard at work digging a tunnel.
Hmm? Yeah. How did you know?
I didn't, I guess. After all, you told me there was a tunnel.
But the three men, how did you know about them?
Still guessing. It's pretty obvious that Mr. Fodor and Lulu couldn't dig much of a hole without getting some help. Tell me this. It was Lulu who persuaded you to call me in on this deal, wasn't it?
How did you know that?
Still just guessing, old man, just guessing. Now, let me guess on for a minute and stop me when I'm wrong. When you saw what Lulu and Fodor were doing, you went home and brooded for a while, and a few days afterwards, you confronted her.
It was the next day.
Okay, it was the next day. Lulu admitted she was planning to rob the bank, but said she was just using Fodor, and you were the only one she really cared about, and if you joined the party, it's you she'd run off with, leaving Mr. Fodor holding the bag. An empty bag. How am I doing?
You're a clever man.
Sure I am. That's why Lulu had you send for me.
You see, the idea is that Fodor will hide the money outside the vault and leave. Then, according to the arrangement, as he understands it, Lulu will come through the tunnel at night with her helpers and take the money back under the street through the tunnel.
Who did she tell Fodor these helpers were?
She said one of them is her brother and the other two are cousins.
And what did she tell you?
That's what she told me. Why?
Nothing, old man. I don't know. Give me one more guess, hmm?
Oh, go ahead.
After Fodor leaves the money, what you do is crawl back through the tunnel with a sack of currency clenched in your teeth. But no, that wouldn't make any sense, would it? You'd run into a couple of brothers crawling in the opposite direction.
I'm not to have anything to do with the tunnel.
Oh.
You see, Fodor leaves the money out just before closing time. That way, he's implicated, and we have a scapegoat. So, there's nothing to stop me from letting myself in with my key at night and walking away with the money. Who could suspect me? It's a perfect crime, Harry. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, yes, it's quite a crime if you look at it in one way. But tell me about the brothers. What are they supposed to think about all this?
Well, they don't know about it. Lulu hasn't told them.
But the news will reach them eventually, and what then?
They must be implicated somehow, along with Fodor. But I must be protected, and Lulu. That's what you're here for, Harry. Have another cigar.
Thank you.
Orson Welles returns in just a moment as The Third Man. And now, Orson Welles as The Third Man continues with today's story, Too Many Crooks.
Naturally, the first thing I did after making my farewells to Mr. Feckety was to go across the street and pay a call on Lulu.
Harry, yeah? Listen to me carefully.
I'm listening, honey.
There's a little cafe in the hill above the old city. You know the place? Mm-hmm. There's a gold roost on the roof.
Now, what about it?
Go there and wait for me. You never can tell when Ford or Feckety will be bursting in here. They keep jumping across the street to check up on each other and buying geraniums. Go to the cafe and I'll be with you as soon as I can close
now
up.
What about the boys below?
Well, what do you mean?
The construction crew, the Corellis.
Oh, Feckety told you about the Corellis?
I would have found out anyway, Lily.
Lulu.
Okay, what happens to them if you shut up the store? Isn't there a way out?
No, but they won't be finished work before I'm back. Besides, what they don't know won't hurt them.
Lily, or rather Lulu, it looks to me as though just about everybody around here is due to be hurt by what they don't know. I found the gold rooster and sat down on the terrace of the restaurant to wait for Mr. Feckety's fiancée. Over a glass of Tokay, I tried to add up the situation as it then. As far as I could see, the whole setup was like a Picasso painting. No matter how you looked at it, it was cockeyed and upside down.
Hello, Harry. Don't want anything for me. I haven't time.
Don't worry, Lily. I'm not here to celebrate. We can have our party after. I know who's going to pay the check.
I wish you'd call me Lulu.
Okay, Lulu. Now, here's all the sense I can make out of this little caper. You came here with a Corelli gun, right?
No, they came first. Then they sent for me to work in the flower shop for a front. The tunnel was their idea.
Then you sent for me. That was your idea.
Right.
My photo thinks he's going to divvy up with the Corellis and marry you on the trophy.
Something like that.
And Feckety thinks something like the same something. The president thinks he's going to put it over the vice president. What about the construction crew?
You mean Walter and
yes,
the others?
The Corellis, the original burglars. What are they going to get out of this? According to Feckety, it's going to be the old double cross, but if I know you, Feckety's in for the same gentle treatment.
Harry, why should anybody get anything out of this reception?
Okay, okay. Book a couple of spaces for us on the first milk train out of Budapest, but be sure to get reservations on the bulletproof car.
I wish you'd call me Lulu.
Time marches on. A lot of trusting Hungarian depositors line up at the bank, leave their hard-earned pengos at the impressive-looking gilt cages for what they fondly believe is safekeeping, and hurry home to have their evening plate of goulash. Closing time comes and goes. Feckety doesn't leave. He just pretends to, and stays skulking in his office. Meanwhile, Fodor takes the big packages of pengos, which, as you know, is Hungarian for money, dutifully to the door of the vault. He slams the vault loudly, this being for the benefit of the janitor, who is deaf anyway and doesn't hear, and quickly stows the loot in the empty filing cabinet, which he has thoughtfully left nearby for just this purpose. He then goes home and passes a very restless night. The moon rises over the city and winks at its own reflection in the Danube. A lot of good Hungarians are in their beds. The others are all in a nightclub called the Arizona, dancing a shardash. They do not come into this story, so we'll leave them dancing. Down onto the street, the Corellis, those adept bank robbers, continue to dig. They are putting the finishing touches on their tunnel, and we will not listen in on them because their conversation is very vulgar indeed. In his luxurious office, Mr. Feckety sits biting his nails and dreaming of a long West Indian cruise with Lulu in an adjoining deck chair. As the gang in the tunnel understand it, when the clock strikes 12, they are to open the secret trap door which they have previously prepared inside the bank, a section of tiling near the vault, go to the filing cabinet and take out the money which Porter has left there, thus eliminating the noise and inconvenience of breaking into the vault, and, first closing the loose tile after themselves, scuttle back with the loot under the street into the flower shop, out into the night and as far away from Hungary as possible. As I say, that's the way the gang in the tunnel understand it. This is also the arrangement as Mr. Fodor understands it, with a trifling difference that he expects Lulu to stop by for him with his share of the profits. Like Mr. Feckety, he is biting his nails and dreaming of tropical cruises. And what of Lulu? What of Lulu, indeed? It is Lulu's little plan to foozle everybody, Corelli, Fodor, and Feckety. She's led them all on to just this point. It is the point of departure. Lulu's departure. Lulu and all those neatly wrapped packages of Pingos. The trouble is, it's all just a little bit too much for one little girl to handle alone, so Harry Lime's been sent for. Harry is supposed to assist at the general foozling of one and all, and then, in due time, of course, he's to be foozled as well. Lulu will send Harry off to mail a postcard, and when he gets back, Lulu will continue her travels alone, with nothing to keep her company but the loot. That, as I say, is the way Lulu understands it. The clock, high in the steeple of San Stefano, strikes 12. This is the signal. Mr. Corelli, that celebrated expert with his two able assistants, starts toward the bank. The tunnel was not built for comfort, and the going on hands and feet is a trifle rough. There's a bit of genteel cursing, but hearts are high. At the sound of the clock, Mr. Feckety removes the bound bundles of money from their place of safety and checks once again the bolts and fastenings which keep the loose tile in its place. In the darkness, Mr. Feckety smiles. He is satisfied that, contrary to the Corelli's expectations, the bank end of the tunnel is firmly and irrevocably closed. Still smiling, he starts toting the money toward the side door for which he, Mr. Feckety, is the perfectly legal possessor of a key. On the outside, Lulu, with a high-speed car, is supposed to be waiting for him. Unfortunately, however, a moment earlier, Harry Lime, on the flower shop end of the tunnel, has persuaded Lulu to go down for a moment and tell the boys not to try lifting that trick tile for at least a half hour. Lulu hates herself now for not having analyzed the merits of this suggestion. She has plenty of time now to think this over because foxy old Harry in the flower shop has bolted down the trap door. The clock has stopped striking, of course, and Mr. Feckety pops out of his bank looking for all the world like a jolly Christmas shopper with his arms loaded with bundles. There is a high-speed car waiting for Mr. Feckety, all right, but it is full of strange gentlemen, and they are all dressed in uniforms.
Put up your hands, Feckety. Huh? Put up your hands. You are under arrest.
But there's some mistake.
Oh, not at all, old man. No mistake at all. You see, gentlemen, just as you were told, there he is, and there's the money.
Come along now, Feckety. We are taking you in.
You, Harry, a police informant.
Not a bit of it, old man. I wouldn't dream of telling on you. No, the cops got the tip-off from an anonymous letter, and you know how you spell anonymous. L-U-L-U.
Lulu. She did it. Lulu.
Lulu, that wouldn't be Lulu Hartz, would it? Alias Lily the Twister.
Yes, officer, I believe so. There's a reward offered for her capture, isn't there?
I should say there is.
What about the Corelli gang?
They've got the biggest price on their heads in Central Europe.
Oh, that's lovely. It's all beginning to add up. When you throw in the generous reward Mr. Feckety posted in the name of his bank this afternoon.
No, you're not going to collect that, are you?
Why not, old man? After all, you put up the money for me to collect before the bank was robbed, didn't you? You also wanted me to thwart the Corellis, and if you yourself are foolish enough to go breaking the law, you'll just have to tell it to the judge.
I'll tell him plenty. I'll tell him about you.
Go ahead. I haven't broken any laws, remember, and you'll only help me collect my various rewards.
Matter of fact, Lime, just what is your connection with this affair? What have you done?
Officer, all I did was turn a bolt on a trap door. Nothing at all, really. Just a twist to the wrist. And now, if you've got some spare handcuffs ready, I think we'd better open it up again. The folks down below may be getting a little fretful, and I think they'll appreciate a change of scene. If you'll come with me, officer, I'll show you the place.
Well, really, Mr. Lime, I can't tell you how grateful...
Please, please, old man, don't mention it. Pleasure, I assure you. Won't you have a cigar?
Harry Lime returns in just a moment.
Thank you.
And now, Harry Lime.
You know, friends, I had thought of substituting those fat packages of Pengos for the same weight of old newspapers. But the rate of exchange wasn't so good on the Pengo just then, so I resisted the temptation. After all, as Mother always said, too many crooks spoil the goulash.
Hey, thank you for listening, and I hope you're able to come back next week, because without you, there wouldn't be these shows. So, thank you. Love you guys.